you seeing how the sausage is made, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's April 21st, 2011. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith. We have something weird has happened today. You might be watching us live on the internet. You might be listening to this recorded tomorrow or the next day or like in October of 2020. We don't know. Basically, EC2, Amazon service that hosts all of our websites, is totally jacked up today. So all bets are off and we're doing all sorts of crazy stuff. Norm's open at Coke. Norm, how are you doing? You're wearing a tie today.
Man, normally people would not be able to see this.
Yeah.
And I did it thinking that it would be a good way to start the show, like last week. You notice?
Yeah, a good non sequitur. Yeah, you're wearing a pattern that you can't wear on camera.
Gingham.
Yeah.
Tiny gingham.
Wow, it's the smallest gingham I've ever seen.
I got the shirt just because it would be the tiniest gingham.
Isn't that the kind of gingham that gives TV cameras seizures?
Though? Yes.
Yes.
Norm has a history of wearing shirts that we're not allowed to wear.
I was prepared and unfucking prepared for this.
Okay, also on the couch, let's do the introductions. As always, Gary Whitta, you're wearing a quite the dashing red shirt today, sir.
Again, I had no idea I was going to be on camera, but, you know, I'm glad I wore a proper shirt. I was going to wear my Three Moon Keyboard Cat shirt, and now I'm glad I didn't.
Well, that's a clashing of memes.
That would have been embarrassing. Well, yeah, but
We talked about this before. That shirt, the lifespan of that shirt, you were so happy the day you got it.
It's like a five-minute shirt, though.
But that's it.
It's like my Red Rhines and Mr. Pibb shirt. But then I was able to wear that twice.
But then it becomes retro.
Well, that's true. I'm going to pull back the old memes.
Things on the internet don't become retro.
The shelf life on meme t-shirts is very, very short. Yeah. It has to be said.
So you really don't even care about the quality.
Well, hold on. And we have an A. We have an A in the cast. It's not Anna. She's in L.A. playing Portal or something. I don't know what's going on. But Andy McCurdy, who you guys may know is one of the fabled Whiskey Media top men. Andy's like our back end. I mean, you're the back end guy.
Yeah, I bring up the rear.
Okay. So Andy's here today to talk about why the internet is busted. What he did, basically.
Yeah, you know, it was totally our fault. We took down Reddit.
Okay.
We took down Quora.
Yeah.
And Foursquare.
Yeah. I mean, I salute you then.
No, yeah. That was part of the plan.
I like Reddit. I like Quora. Right.
No, it was all part of the plan. And then unintentionally, also our sites.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It
your finger slipped.
Yeah.
Okay, so before... so
not a good thing when you're, you know, bring up the rear.
I mean, clearly, for us at least, and for a lot of the internet, this is big news. Because Amazon site... it seems like it goes down about once a year now. I mean, the EC2, and we're all hosted there now. I think this is a place to go a little bit behind the curtain more than we normally do. But we host all of our servers in Amazon's cloud service, which is called Amazon Web Services, which is like a big umbrella for a bunch of different services.
Right.
Right. And so, like, there's EC2, which is essentially computers.
Yes.
And then there's S3, which is like a big storage cloud.
Yes.
And then there's this other thing that I've never heard of before that connects the two with the internet, which is what's broken, right?
Well, no, what's broken is EBS, which is Elastic Block Store. Think of it as a huge bank of hard drives that connect into the EC2 servers
over
a network.
So S3 is long-term storage. This thing is like RAM.
No, they're both long-term storage. The difference is that with EBS volumes, you can actually mount them to your operating system, and they become like directories inside of your file system. Whereas S3 is this completely separate beast that you really only access via HTTP.
Okay.
Right. So S3 is perfect for storing things like images or video.
Or videos.
Oh, so that's where all of our...
All of that stuff, our JavaScript and you know, CSS files, like all that stuff is on S3 and delivered via cloud.
Like anything that people pull from media.tested.com
exactly.
Or media.jbomb or
whatever. Domain directly points to...
S3.
S3.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then some sites are up basically because they have... like we have one database server. It lives in Northern Virginia in the Amazon cloud.
In the effed up space.
Yeah, in what's broken.
Yeah.
Like basically everything about Amazon is working except for this one particular data center.
Yes.
And that's why like Amazon is still up, because they use this too.
They use this too. But they're spread across.
They eat their own dog food.
Exactly. And they're spread across, like they recommend that you should, they're spread across all of their data centers. So Northern Virginia, they have one in San Francisco. They have one in, I believe, Ireland.
Yeah, they're all over.
And one they're probably going to put them in Oregon. Hong Kong and Singapore and, yeah, everywhere.
So why aren't we spread across?
Did someone trip over a cord or something?
Well, so the details are kind of vague right now. What they have released is that at about 1 a.m. Pacific time this morning, there was a loud beep like that.
Okay.
And that caused all of these hard drives, which, you know, they have hundreds, thousands of them probably in these banks. And they said about half of them were in use.
Okay.
And what eventually ended up happening is a beep like that happened, and all the ones that were in use said, oh, shit, I'm in panic mode. I need to make sure that my data is safe.
So they started copying.
They started trying to mirror themselves to the other hard drives in the data center that were, you know, free.
Okay.
And so this kind of thing happens all the time.
Right.
Anytime that there's a little hiccup or whatever, generally it only happens with a few drives.
Out of thousands.
Out of thousands, if not tens of thousands, you know, perhaps even more.
So we kind of joked about this on the podcast a few weeks ago and said that there is somewhere at Amazon, there's a dude whose whole job it is to open up hard drives, take them out of the package, and then just jam them into new machines.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
In each of these data centers, probably.
Yes.
And they just do this all day long, around the clock, because there's just more data coming all the time.
Sure.
And when things go sideways, so basically it tried to, what was already existing, tried to make copies of every single thing on the service.
Exactly.
And they ran out of space, and then things went sideways.
Well, it's unclear whether they ran out of space or not. They definitely filled capacity up so that new requests for new storage space to be allocated couldn't be fulfilled.
Okay.
The other thing that happened was that because all this data was being copied around, it completely saturated their network.
Oh, okay.
And so...
And they should have really fast network there, right? Like giga 10 gigabit fiber channel and
I'm
all
sure
sorts of crazy stuff like
that. I'm
sure that
they have the awesome of the awesome.
Okay.
Is
quantum tunneling, basically.
Yes. They have the Roadrunner speed, you know, internet.
Okay. Fios.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. but, you know, so what ended up happening is, so how we use that service, for instance, is all of our important stuff is stored on EBS.
Okay.
So we don't necessarily care about the physical box that is our database server, because we can spin a copy of that up anywhere.
Oh, so okay.
In their cloud.
So if something goes sideways, the machine breaks, the server hangs, you just say, okay, forget that one, we're just going to make a new copy of that and connect it to the old server's storage.
Well, connect the old server's storage to that new server.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And then it just picks up where it left off.
Exactly. And so that's one of the huge advantages of EBS and network-attached storage in general, is that you can do these kind of cool things.
Until the whole data center goes kaput.
Exactly.
Okay. So at some point, like theoretically, Netflix and giant companies have these servers running in multiple places, and they use different kinds of databases to make, like, Ireland database talk to San Francisco database, talk to Northern Virginia databases.
Exactly.
We don't do that because it would take a lot of work to make happen, and we're kind of not big enough to need to worry about
that. It's a time and money kind of issue where, you know, could we do that? Could we be more reliable in that sense? Yes. Is it worth the time investment?
Where's my wiki?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Would you rather be down for 12 hours a year?
Where's my wiki,
Or
Andy?
Would you rather have a wiki?
I want a wiki. It's well established. I want a wiki. So, also, I forgot to mention this at the beginning, but Corey, intern Corey, also known as Internet Casey, and the dude with the long mic, is here. He's taking questions from the Justin TV chat. So if you have questions, we're not going to do a ton of questions like through the show. We'll do like a normal question and answer. But if you have questions about this stuff for Andy while he's sitting here, now is the time to get them in. And I don't know how you send them to Casey, Corey, Bobby.
They just at me.
Yeah, you can just add him on the Giant Bomb chat.
Right,
the
I'm on Justin Deadpool TV channel. With two zeros for O's because apparently the other one was already taken.
So he's on Deadpool. Okay.
This is kind of embarrassing for Amazon, isn't it? Do they have to give you a refund or something for your downtime?
Get some extra Netflix credits.
They should give you a 2-minute shopping spree on Amazon. I could make good use of that.
Yeah, no kidding.
What would you do, Norm, if you had 2 minutes? Where would you go first?
Well, see, when I go to Amazon, I usually hit like movies, music, but you got to go to the big stuff. Amazon's not very easy to navigate. If you like,
you can buy yourself
get...
like a $50,000 gold watch on Amazon if you want.
I'd search all and sort by price and just go highest
search
to lowest.
All. Just buy the. What do you think the most expensive single item on Amazon is?
Like uranium.
I'm sure it's a
uranium.
It's a high end watch.
Plutonium, probably.
I'm pretty sure you can't get that.
Okay, I want something that they could actually deliver on, and it wouldn't be like from an Amazon affiliate because I don't trust those guys.
No,
it has to be in their warehouse.
Prime.
Yeah, something you don't need Prime because it's unlimited. The 2-minute shopping spree. It takes probably 30 seconds. You can probably get 4 items.
Why don't you just go for quantity though? Just go for like the coolest plasma TV.
And then increase
LED. You only buy one of each item.
Okay. One of each item. Okay.
Well, then what I want to do is I want to get the item that had the best, like people who bought this item also got this related thing.
Oh yeah,
that's the way you stream.
So then you can open all links.
Then you can just buy 4 at once, get the pack.
That's a good idea.
So like people who buy a speedboat also bought, you know, a yacht or real estate, and
that's good thinking.
Yeah.
So I guess any questions from the chat, Corey?
Some people are concerned. They're wondering if like the Whiskey Media videos are okay. Like basically, if the data is still okay and intact, like all the content.
Yeah, so all the video, all the images, all that stuff, that's all hosted on S3, and that outage actually, or there is no outage there. So all of that content is well preserved.
Like if you're trying to download podcasts on iTunes, they're going to still be there.
Correct.
Yeah.
And they should still work right now.
Yeah.
The things that are affected, most importantly, are the databases, the wikis, the forums, the comments,
the
like
stuff
all that
we do.
Yeah, the stuff that you guys do and probably care
everybody
a little
on the
bit
site
about.
Does. And yeah. I mean, it's only been a year. I've only worked here for a year, but
exactly.
I care.
Exactly. But you know, if the Giant Bomb Wiki went down, then you two would be starting even.
That's true. Standing start. We don't want that to happen, though. I mean, the worst case, you could just go to Internet Archive and start parsing pages, right?
You could
write something that'll do that.
Yeah, we
could. Only
a
few million pages
per
site. It's easy.
You know, we've experimented with these kind of, failover scenarios or failure scenarios before. In general, we use Postgres as our relational database to power most of that stuff. It's pretty reliable.
It's getting nerdy up in here.
Yeah. We may end up losing a few, forum posts.
From something. 1 o'clock in the morning last night.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you have a contingency, is what you're saying. The top men have a book that you guys refer to in case of internet dying.
Project Orion.
Well, we have a brain that we refer to, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of a bummer because you know that the guys are posting on the forums at 1 o'clock in the morning, the guys that are really into the forums.
Yeah, they're the hardcore.
Or they're
guys.
Australians.
Well, that too.
Okay, so Andy, I know you have stuff to do. I appreciate you coming out.
I do. I have to try to get the internet
deprive
back
us of
up.
Our wing.
Is there really anything you could? I mean, the problem's on their end. What can you really do but sit and wait?
Yeah, unfortunately, not much. Once all of our EBS volumes do become remirrored and come back up, I'm sure there'll be some amount of kind of recovery work that we have to do. Hopefully, that's minimal. 15, 20 minutes.
Free Prime for everyone. I think that would be reasonable. Free Amazon Prime.
Prime for a month?
Or Kindles all around?
Kindles all around.
Yeah.
Prime
for a year.
Kindles seems like
Prime
the way
is only
to go.
$100 for them. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's nothing to them.
Plus just buying more shit from Amazon.
Well, thanks, Andy, for coming.
Yeah,
I appreciate it, man.
Thanks for having me.
I'm gonna see if I can remember which mic is you and turn you down
five,
now.
I believe.
Five, is that what I said?
That is correct.
Oh, yeah, I don't hear you anymore. There's a nice hum on Gary's mic, though.
Is there? Let me try moving my mic around.
Yeah. Gary, you got to put the headphone behind your head.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Is that why?
Run the headphone cable behind your head.
You got to low bot it.
Okay, I'm gonna turning Gary's mic
there
down, too. Okay,
so
while Gary gets his headphones situated, it looks like that's happening
is
now.
Is that better?
There's been a kind of a lot of news this week. I mean, in addition to the EC2 outage, which is obviously a bigger deal for us than it is for the rest of the internet, there's been some iPhone security stuff that's kind of unusual. Yesterday, I guess, was it just yesterday? It seems like
just
so long
yesterday.
Ago. a couple of security researchers released a report that said, hey, the iPhone and iPad 3G, anything that's iOS with 3G data on it, has a file that tracks every cell tower you've talked to, your device has talked to.
And not just every cell tower, the location, but also when.
Yeah, time, date, yes. Second.
You can track your movements.
Yeah, which is kind of bad. I mean, that's not something that I like. I don't know where that hum's coming from. I don't know if it's going through the stream, but if people are complaining about the sound, let me know.
So what, people are worried about some kind of Orwellian thing where Apple knows exactly where you are all the time?
Well, it's not Apple. It's that it's really easily accessible to, say, angry spouses, private investigators,
this data isn't being sent anywhere.
I wrote a story about this. It's on Tested.
File. It was on Tested yesterday at midnight until 1:41 a.m. PST. But it's not being sent anywhere. It's a file that's on your phone, and it's very easy to access once you jailbreak
the phone.
Oh,
so someone can just look at the file.
Well, it's harder if you just look at the file, but you can also, if you sync your iPhone, every time you back up your iPhone to your computer, it's just saved in an unencrypted file on the hard drive of the computer, mm-hmm. which is where the real problem comes.
You can pull text messages from that.
Yeah.
You can pull everything from that
file. I mean, with iOS 4, Apple added the ability to encrypt that backup, which I think probably no one has done. I've looked at that and I'm like, I don't need to encrypt my backup. It's fine. Now I'm looking and thinking, might be worth doing.
Why, are you making some furtive movements around the country?
You're
worried about people discovering?
Well, it was funny because Will was on his Mac. You have to use a Mac.
Yeah, you have to use a Mac for the software right now.
And he pulled up the map of where he's been. Mm. And he looked at the map and he's like, I don't remember going here at all.
Right.
Oh, wait, I was there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is it's from when iOS 4 came out. It's a relational database that has, like I said, relative GPS coordinates. It has a degree of accuracy. It has the time, date, seconds of when it pinged the towers. And it seems like it's about the tower pings more than your actual location. But so the problem is people connect to your MacBook. I don't know where people are having a big conversation around us, but that kind of sucks. You connect to the MacBook. You run this utility, and it literally shows like a Google map of all the places that you've been for the last year. And then you can see on a week-by-week basis where you traveled. So, for example, we were able to see the drive from San Francisco to Las Vegas in January to go to CES.
Yeah.
I went to a wedding last July in L.A. I flew through Chicago on my way home at the holidays. I was in Tennessee, a couple of different places.
You could even see where we got lost on the way down to CES. Like, the detour route.
So this is no surprise because the telecom companies have been able to do this for a long time.
It's AT&T putting GPS and cell tower information into phones. Then we know this information's got to exist somewhere, right?
Well, it's not even that. It's that the cell phone companies have to know where your phone is in order to talk to like route calls to you.
Right.
So whenever you go into a new area, then you know the phone goes out, reaches out to the tower, says, "Hey, I'm Gary's phone, and I'm here."
Right.
And then AT&T has a record of that. The thing is, there's no real good data on this. I did a lot of looking yesterday. There's no real good data on whether people are actually able to subpoena that, like for civil suits and stuff like that. I know like the FBI and the police and all that can access that information with court orders or terror threat levels and all that stuff. But it's unclear whether like in a divorce case, your angry soon-to-be ex-wife could go out and get a subpoena for your phone records from AT&T.
Right.
Might be not worth the hassle. However, they can easily subpoena your PC. So, the unfortunate thing is Apple probably uses this for good purposes. I mean, there's probably good reasons to do this, because it gives them relative quality of service and tells them which tower to connect to and which is more reliable and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But there's no way to opt out, and the only way to delete this information is to wipe your phone and start from scratch. So I went through and tested a bunch of different stuff to see if wiping the phone actually gets rid of it. It does. That was good. The remote wipe that you do if you put a passcode on, you fuck that up 10 times, and then it wipes your phone. That also gets rid of it, as does the MobileMe remote wipe. So if you encrypt your backup on your Mac or your PC, and then also enable a passcode and set the phone to allow remote wiping or delay, you're kind of covered. I'm sure people with iPhone forensic tools can still get in and have
so the access concern to this is stuff. Really more about nosy
spouses
and friends so rather than because I saw this MSNBC covered this story this morning and people would their angle on it was more of a Big Brother thing, but I don't know if that's really
I don't think it's a Big Brother thing.
Well, that's
subpoenaed
kind of
by by you know the courts.
The thing is, the mainstream. I saw the Today Show segment on this morning. It's typical mainstream media fear mongering where they. Yeah. Got half of the story, and a lot of people are kind of messing up even that half of the story.
So if you're going to go to Victoria's Secret to buy lingerie for your wife, and you don't want her to know from your phone, turn airplane mode on.
Yeah.
So it doesn't connect to a cell phone tower.
Is the location that accurate?
It's like in private browsing, but for real life. Right? It's incognito mode for your phone.
It's the location's pretty accurate. You also have to turn off Wi-Fi. Because it does pick up Wi-Fi access points, too.
Well, airplane mode.
Airplane mode, you can turn Wi-Fi back on, though.
Okay. Wi-Fi off, airplane mode on. Then you can buy your wife presents.
Yes, your wife
presents.
Presents. Yeah. That was a huge story yesterday. I don't think it's as big a deal as people are made it out to be. They've already found the similar files on Android. It's just kind of a part and parcel. Isn't that an English saying?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a part and parcel of having a cell phone.
Do you think that the reactionary, the Big Brother stuff, the media response to this is heightened when it's Apple? It always seems like it's a little bit, the reaction's a little bit stronger.
I think it's anytime it's new technology. I mean, we saw this with video games for a long time where, basically anytime somebody came out with a violent video game or something new or different, everybody flipped out, the whole thing went upside down, and people were pissed off.
I definitely think it's because of Apple, because so many people have iPhones, and they hold Apple such a high standard.
I mean, especially
the day after they announced their quarterly earnings.
The day that they announced their quarterly earnings, yeah. But I mean, it's people are afraid of new technology. I mean, that's the other side of it. People are always afraid of, this is I've got this thing in my phone pocket that's watching me all the time. It's a kind of mind tracking device.
Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean people aren't out to get you. I mean, I think that's a legitimate thing. You know, when you're carrying a device around that even when turned off can be used to locate you.
That's true. Well, it can't be used to locate when it's turned off.
Well, no, but isn't like in these Bourne Identity movies, they say like you got to take the battery out of your phone, otherwise they can always.
I saw that in Pineapple Express.
Destroy the SIM card and throw the battery and throw the phone in a puddle somewhere.
My feeling is that if you really paranoid take the battery out, you can't do that on an iPhone. I think turning it off.
And now we know why.
Right, Steve Jobs is watching you. Playbook is out.
I'm holding one.
Right.
Norm has it
right
in his hand.
I think
that's probably the biggest tech news of this week.
The playbook kind of sucks.
It wouldn't be a tested podcast if Norm wasn't engaged with a tablet at the same time as podcasting.
And that's a different tablet every week. I've disposed of the Zoom. The iPad 1 is still my primary tablet, but for the next couple weeks. It will be this little thing.
Now, I got to say,
the BlackBerry Playbook.
I've been making a lot of jokes about the Playbook.
Without having seen it or touched it.
I've been knocking it a lot, but I'm man enough to admit when something confounds my expectations. And just in the 5 minutes that I spent with it before the show, very impressed.
Well, so the unfortunate thing is, had they released this and it had email and calendar and contacts, it would be pretty good. I mean, people would have given it good reviews. The performance is really good. The browser's nice. The multitasking works really well. It doesn't have very many apps
Before we even get into all the things, I mean, we can't give them a pass on this email thing, can we?
No, I absolutely not.
RAM BlackBerry built their name on mobile email. Mm-hmm. The fact that their tablet shipped without email, I think, is just
insane.
It's beyond a joke.
It's absolutely crazy.
It's beyond a joke. Now, so the thing was, they said that because of the way that. They're not used to people having more than one BlackBerry device, right?
Well, so there's a couple problems. One is that enterprise clients, I think BlackBerry Enterprise Server, can't have multiple connections from the same user on multiple devices.
Right.
So you can't have two BlackBerries connected to BlackBerry Enterprise Server. And most of the people using BlackBerries in a corporate environment are using BlackBerry Enterprise Server.
And typically just have one BlackBerry.
Yeah.
But now they want people to have a phone and a tablet.
Yes.
And that's messing them up.
So they want to service their business or BlackBerry customers first. And the only way they can reconcile having the two BlackBerry devices connected to the server is so that you can only have email when you're tethered with the BlackBerry bridge with a BlackBerry phone. Now, that doesn't mean that they couldn't have developed an email client so I can run Gmail or PopMail or IMAP, whatever.
Right, but again, what BlackBerry made their name on is that push instant email, right?
Sure. Well, their whole business has been built on email. And you know, giving people easy access to email.
I can't hear myself anymore, but that's all right.
Yeah.
So we did a first look of the BlackBerry Playbook. I think it was 2 days ago?
Tuesday.
It's on the site, not now, obviously. But if you haven't seen that, we'll give you a quick rundown. So this is a 7-inch tablet, and people watching the stream can see right now. Gary, one thing that you pointed out to me, and we all kind of noticed this and talked about this, is that the bezel seems relatively
thick.
Large. Thick.
Yes.
Well, it's because the screen's small.
Well, it seems about the same width as the iPad bezel, but on a smaller device, that
instead
seems
of a 7-inch screen, instead of a 9.7-inch screen. And I think we kind of agreed that you're not going to get away around that. Just because it's a 7-inch screen, it doesn't mean that the bezel is also going to be 20% thinner.
Now, the fact that it's an active bezel mitigates that somewhat. I think that's a very cool feature.
Well, there's two things. One is I think the bezel is the width of a thumb. There's a reason for that. It's because you hold this with your thumb on the bezel so you don't hit the touch screen.
And people that when they first showed the iPad, people complained that the screen didn't go all the way to the edge.
Yeah.
Then it came out. People understood why that was.
Yeah, you immediately
We saw that the Motorola Zoom had a thinner bezel than the iPad, but and even a bigger screen, 10.1 inch. And it was hard to hold because it was curved and you couldn't hold it with one hand. This, the thumb-width bezel, makes this possible to hold with the one hand.
But what's great, and I'd love to see Apple rip this off for the next iPad, is how the bezel can actually be used as
a
control surface. That's fantastic.
I mean, Apple has some patents about that stuff. We've talked about them in the past. I mean, the swipe up from the bottom, swipe left from the edges, we're kind of just scraping the surface of this. They don't expose it too well for the users when they're trying to figure out how to use this thing.
Are you kidding me? That's the first tutorial they teach you.
Dude, if you're using a tutorial to explain that, it's a...
How else are they going to expose that to you?
I probably wouldn't have figured it out on mine, but Norm told me what to do, and I had it down in like 30 seconds.
I mean, that's the thing.
I think they do a fine
job. It could have been
a
pop-up on the home screen, just like the iOS one that says, here's how you make folders.
Okay,
hold it down and drag.
There's a difference between exposing it to the user if you pick it up and it's already set up, and a first-time owner. If you open it out of the box, when you do all the setup, and you got to do setup with, you don't have to connect it to iTunes or anything, set it up like an iPad.
It just works.
It just works, but you do have to go and put your email address, so you're tied
to your account. And you have to create a BlackBerry account.
You have to create a BlackBerry account, and then they only give you two tutorials. One is how to use the main menu, and then one is touch bezel. And you can't bypass them, you got to run through them quickly, but then, like you said, anyone could tell you, hey, look, you swipe up from the bottom and you get the main menu. You swipe down from the top, you get the context
menus. Mm-hmm.
And it's not like two-finger or three-finger gestures. It's just anytime you swipe up, you get back to the home screen.
So it's very natural.
Very natural.
You've used this more than any of the rest of us so far, Norm.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the typing? Because the first thing I noticed was the type ahead prediction isn't. It doesn't do type ahead prediction.
No, I haven't seen the keyboard yet.
Yeah. So let me open up the keyboard so I can show you, Gary. So 7-inch tablet, I like. Like with the Galaxy Tab.
It seems like it's thumb friendlier.
It's very thumb friendly in the portrait orientation.
Yeah.
So right now when the keyboard's on the bottom, this is like a big phone and I can cross my thumbs, and so the T I can hit with either my left thumb or my right thumb or
Y. And that's a problem that the bigger tablets like the iPad have even in portrait configuration, it's kind of a stretch to get your thumbs into the
I mean it's impossible. For the iPad you can kinda do it if you have like big hands. But in landscape mode, which is how this is supposed to be used, it's more like iPad.
It's like a cording almost. You just use one hand.
I mean, you can't
hold it with one and type.
You still can type with two hands, and I've done that, and that's what I want to force myself to do.
Right.
But
the keyboard, I do need longer thumbs. The no type ahead prediction is annoying. I did have to get used to like the Enter button and the Go button aren't where I think they are. It's kind of used to iOS devices.
Okay.
But I like the keyboard. There is no haptic response. It doesn't vibrate at all. When you type, but you do get a nice little plucking sound when you type the virtual keyboard.
The other thing that I was impressed about...
That's the first thing I turn off on iOS.
I like that, actually.
Ugh. The other thing I liked when I first saw it compared to the other non-iPad tablets that I've seen is the build quality feels very good.
You mean the Zoom and the Galaxy Tab?
Yes.
Okay.
Those feel plasticky and kind of cheap.
I think the Zoom feels okay. This definitely feels better than the
This
tab
feels heavy, but
Zoom.
Like in a way that it feels like it's a quality device.
Yeah.
The rubberized... backing feels feels good as well. Like I would feel confident just chucking that down on a table and not worrying about it getting beat up the way that people are very precious with their iPads because they don't want scratches on them. This doesn't feel like it would scratch up.
It's kind of got
easily.
A nice grippy surface too.
It's still plastic, but it feels sturdy. And part of that's because it's a little heavier than the Galaxy Tab.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't flex.
It definitely does not flex.
Very good quality screen.
The screen I think is probably the second best screen.
I think it's close behind Apple.
Close.
We'll have to do some real side by side comparisons.
IPS?
I mean, it's rivaling.
I don't think it's IPS. the viewing angles are not as good as on the iPad, but the color quality.
But the first thing when I first saw it, my initial response was I was struck by the quality of the screen, vibrancy of the colors, very bright, very good.
Good contrast.
So, the other thing, the screen's bright enough, it works really well outside. I took it outside the other day and shot some videos, shot some pictures. The cameras are also quite good.
I mean, 1080p front and back, that's amazing.
Right, and
for
it's
video,
not,
yeah.
It's not a bad 1080p. It's, it does well in low light. I mean, again, it's great that it has the front and back cameras. It's real thin on apps to use that stuff. There's no video conferencing app so right now. There's no Skype. There's no I can't remember what the Bump It or Blip It or whatever the Android kind of version is.
Right.
It's real thin on the ground on that front.
Well, I mean, the camera app, built-in camera app is fine. Yeah, there's no video conferencing. That is a problem.
Front-facing camera. The only thing you're going to use that for is video conferencing.
Or like Gary, the first thing you did was take a picture of yourself.
Okay.
And you know, like you said, Will, I think we talked about this earlier. Like your wife, she downloaded 5 different mirror apps. People with tablets
and
phones.
Thank you for outing my wife.
They buy apps or use apps to use their tablets as mirrors.
That's
true.
Why not? If it's a 3-megapixel camera in the front, it's fine as a mirror.
So this definitely beats the iPad 2 cameras.
Oh, easily.
Yeah, the iPad 2 cameras are really shitty.
A junk.
Very poor.
So the big shortcoming on this, and I mean, this is really the reason I wouldn't recommend anybody buy this right now. Norm's going to test it out, do the full review. But the initial reaction is don't wait to buy this. Not don't wait to buy this, but you should wait before you buy this.
Yes. What are we waiting for?
Because there's no apps. There's very little apps.
That's the Achilles heel right now is obviously iOS and Android have got very good app ecosystems.
Well,
Android
at least
tablet
they have app ecosystems.
Is, you know, starting from scratch a little bit, but this is behind even... I mean, how many apps are there right now for the playbook?
BlackBerry says 3,000, but they're all... I would say 70% of those, 80% of those are shit.
Right.
Now, and the other 20%
a lot of them
are rip-offs of like you know, a half-assed Twitter client, something that kind of taps in your Dropbox but doesn't do syncing, no real Messenger stuff. So it's...
So, you know, when we talk about like the cornerstone apps that you want... Like,
Pandora, Kindle, Twitter, Netflix. Facebook, Netflix, none of that stuff.
It has nothing in it.
Nothing.
Okay, that's a problem.
When you go to the App Store and search for Twitter... It takes you to a shortcut for Twitter on the website.
But we can expect that stuff to come online,
Come. I mean, maybe. I mean, I don't know. It's a new platform. So whether people decide to support it or not, it's kind of up to them. I think, I mean, BlackBerry really knows that this is a problem. They're giving away free playbooks to people who develop apps for the platform. Mm-hmm. So there's a pretty strong motivator if you're a small dude who, you know, wants to see if you can make money on the side. There's a big opportunity to come in. Because they're selling a fair number of these.
If you're a developer, let's say you're the guy that made Doodle Jump.
Yes.
Is it a relatively I'll do a playbook version.
Right. Yeah.
Is it a big deal to port it over? Is it an easy process?
It depends on how you wrote what you wrote the app in the first place.
I don't think it'll be that hard. And plus, like if Doodle Jump popped up on the playbook today, so it's been out for a day and they've sold 50,000 of them. The guy would make $50,000 basically if it came
There's
out on the playbook today. There's
right.
nothing there. The first killer app game that comes out in here will have like a 99% adoption.
And the first Twitter client is going to cost $5.
Yeah.
I mean, just to be clear.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to release.
There's a lot of incentive for people to get good apps on the playbook.
So how do you break out of that chicken and egg situation where people won't buy the product until there are apps and people won't develop apps until a lot of people have the product?
Well, this like the Zoom, this feels almost like a developer release. I mean, this is more polished in a lot of ways, but missing email client, missing contacts and stuff like that is not something I'm going to use day to day for what I use my tablet for.
Here's how BlackBerry is getting around the chicken egg thing: the Android app launcher.
Right.
So
this is the ace up their sleeve if it works.
It's not out now. Again, not out at launch.
Out now. We're hearing a lot.
Say by the summer there will be an emulator that will run Android apps natively on the playbook. You have to run a launcher, and then you can download the Android version of the game over BlackBerry App World, and then run it. We don't know if it'll be the same performance, but this is a dual core, 1 GHz, and everything has been smooth so far.
Do you think that it was the right decision to put this out now with some missing features, and it's kind of an inauspicious launch, people are complaining about various things, or should they have waited and released the all-singing or dancing version?
You know, what I would have done, I think the smarter thing to do is to roll it out to corporate customers who are interested and do a developer launch.
Well, have you seen ads
who
for this
buy
anywhere?
It, like the Pre 2 did.
I mean, have you seen ads anywhere
I haven't
for this?
Seen any
I haven't
ads.
Seen any
I don't
ads.
Think they're pushing this for consumers. I mean, it's in Best Buys, But I think it's for the corporate people.
You think
people.
This is a corporate
But why do corporate people need a tablet?
Well, here, are you kidding me?
A lot of corporate people
I take that back. Clearly, the iPad's been very popular with corporate customers. But again, if it's not doing the corporate features like email and contact,
but it is.
Because those people
have the
BlackBerry.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, Salesforce is saying that tablets are their default device for their internal people.
Right.
They're giving out, you start at Salesforce, depending on what your job is, you might not get a laptop, you might just get an iPad or a Playbook or whatever tablet they're deploying. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, tablets, corporate customers are really excited about tablets because it's really easy to swap in and out, maintenance is low, you know, there's no, the total cost of ownership or whatever corporate customers care about.
Now,
these days,
how is this Android thing going to work? Is it some kind of emulation? What is
so
that?
So you don't actually launch... They're not being very specific about it. But in the press release that they announced, they said you have to download a separate app, the Android app launcher.
Okay.
Run that app, and from within that app, you can launch your Android apps.
Yes.
So does it turn this into an emulated Android device, basically?
Not Honeycomb, but it will run the SDK, the executable.
Right. And there's questions about whether it's going to run Dalvik, which is the Java optimization stuff that Google has done for Android. I mean, it's all very nebulous right now. So we're going to have to wait and see.
If that works as we would hope it would,
yeah.
That's a huge... That really leapfrogs them forward in the app
situation.
Well,
kind of. I mean,
it makes you less remorseful about buying it. It needs three things. It needs the utilities, the email and the contacts and calendars, which BlackBerry promises will come. It needs first-party native apps, Twitter, Pandora, Netflix.
It needs the basics.
Not the Android versions, but needs those, the basics. And then it needs the Android's app support.
Right. Yeah.
And with those three things, I would feel comfortable using this.
That Android app support has to be good. It has to be fast. Yeah. It has to be reliable. Yeah. It has to be not a pain in the ass to launch those apps. They need to behave just like native apps. And if that doesn't happen, it's not going to be any
good. It's frustrating, as we see with so many of these devices. This is a... Hardware-wise, this seems like a really great device.
Yeah,
great technology, great build quality, but the ecosystem's not quite there.
And you can't even say the software is bad either. I mean, you were just using this, and the home screen, like the interface...
No, the operating system and the browser and everything is tremendous. I'm just saying that apps are what make or break one of these devices now.
I'm a little more optimistic about this particular tablet because the browser actually is quite good.
So let's talk about the browser.
And I think that's going to help some because, like, things that don't work on iOS or Android browsers work on this browser.
And even things that supposedly work on Android, like when the Zoom came out, the big thing on the box was, hey, this thing runs Flash for real. It has tabs and all that jazz. Well, those things, one, Flash wasn't actually out at launch. You had to download a patch to actually get to work on Zoom. And Flash did not run really well on the Zoom and even on, like, the LG Slate, which just came out this week. On here, Flash is awesome. Flash.
Well, it didn't work during when we were doing the live show.
Well, guess
the other
what? Day. I'm watching the live
show. You are
watching
Justin
TV right now. Streaming Flash.
Wow. And that's just on the website. That's just on the website.
Yeah. And when the video is running, like.
So they've already.
The fast response.
It worked with Hulu the other day. Of course, they've already killed that.
They just killed the Hulu thing this morning.
But I mean, it seems much more capable than your traditional tablet browser, which is something I'm very excited about.
Mm-hmm. And I would say even just in the few minutes I played with it, I found the navigation and the fluidity, whatever you want to call it, of the OS, just the general experience,
it's very comparable,
superior to Android.
Yeah.
I would say.
Oh yeah,
very comparable to iOS.
So and also felt a little bit like what we might expect tablet web OS to look like. The swiping left and right between the different applications almost feels like the cards.
Very similar to the cards.
Real multitasking, like apps actually continuing to run the background, web pages continuing to load.
Well, and they give you the choice.
Yeah,
you can have the kind of API-mediated multitasking they have on iOS.
Now,
you have real multitasking if you want to kill your battery.
That terrified me when you showed me you could do that. We ran a video.
Yeah.
I swiped away, did something else, went back into the task launches, and the video is still running.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, my God, is that killing my battery?
During the live quick look, we did it with a game. So I had Need for Speed, Shift, or Most Wanted, I can't remember which one, running on one tab. Norm multitasked away, and it was still controlling.
The game is still playing,
which was crazy.
So it's still reading the accelerometer and all that stuff.
I have brightness full right now, and I have it in the showcase mode where apps run no matter what, even if other apps are full screen.
Okay.
I started this morning about 2 hours ago at about 80% battery life. I am about 40%. It's 40% battery.
So it's a battery monster when you turn all that stuff on. I mean, it's promising. I hate buying stuff based on promise of future features to come.
Is this Wi-Fi only right now?
It is Wi-Fi only right now.
Okay. Is there going to be a
Well, you can bridge. If you have a BlackBerry,
then you can bridge and
you get internet through that.
Right.
So, and I don't, it's unclear what the charges for that are, whether you have to pay for a tethering plan.
And how much are they charging for this thing?
$500 for the 16 gig Wi-Fi version. Same price as
the iPad,
the 9-inch iPad, you know, 16 gig Wi-Fi.
I mean, the thing is, I think the screen size is, in a lot of ways, I'm much more interested in that as a screen size than I am in the 10-inch, just because it's light enough to hold one-handed, lay in bed, and read stuff. On the other hand, you are in a phone type browser situation where you're using a 16x9 browser. You want to zoom in on the column of text you're interested in reading. I mean, there's pros and cons to both 10 inches and 7 inches. I think Steve Jobs is foolish to come out and say 7-inch tablets are dumb.
I think this
he's wrong. He's absolutely wrong.
I think this more than any other device so far really makes the case for a 7-inch tablet.
And also, I mean, it's the perfect...
Well, if it had the apps.
For me, it's the perfect, for my use cases, watching TV and then sitting on the couch and then using IMDb and Twitter and email on here.
It's very easy to look at that and imagine an iPad mini.
Yeah.
Right, with iOS running on that screen size.
That fits in the back of my jeans pocket.
I don't think
should Apple do that?
You got big jeans, Will.
I got a giant ass, Norm.
Why should they not do that?
Because Steve Jobs said, whether they should or shouldn't, they're not going to do it because Steve Jobs said tablets are dumb.
He's going to say he did it right. He found the right way to do
that's
it.
That's
right.
Why, yeah. That would
magic.
Be the
standard. They put the magic in the 7-inch tablet.
But we're seeing this pattern emerging, right? These iPad competitors are coming out. They seem to be getting better and better. I think, you know, the Tab was terrible. The Zoom was better than the Tab. This, I would say,
it's a gradual
in many
process,
ways is better than the Zoom, but they're all missing something. There's a wait and see factor that comes with all of these tablets.
I would like to see this survive.
I like this, and I made a lot of jokes about this, and I've said I thought
you've been mean
die.
To it. You should apologize to those
both
nice
have been
Canadian
mean
folks.
To it.
The device is tremendous.
It's
they
dumb to release.
They need
no
to
mail.
Get the ecosystem in place.
Corey, any questions from the chat about the playbook?
Can you do audio recording on the playbook?
There is audio out, but there is no line in.
There's no microphone? There's got
to
be a microphone.
Well, for a video there has to be.
Yeah. Well, there is no video chat right now, but I think there is a mic.
Presumably, you're not recording silent 1080p videos. There's got to be a mic.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
There's a hole right there on the top.
There it goes. That's a mic. So, yes.
Anything else? Anybody else have queries?
But you would need an app to do it.
Yeah.
How hot does the playbook get?
So, very good point. Gary, I've had it on nonstop. Put your hand right there on the bottom.
That's pleasingly warm.
It's warm. It's
I mean,
warm.
It's. I would actually. Can I it's barely.
Give me a.
It's warm. It's not hot, but it's definitely
warm. It's tepid.
Warm.
I have mad temperature judging skills. Damn it!
Okay. Do you have the laser gun?
No. Well, yeah, but it's outside of the reach of my double cabled self. This is about 102 at the outside, maybe 103 in the high spot Fahrenheit, not Celsius.
That's not natural that you can actually put a number on it.
Oh, Drew kindly brought us the temperature gun. Hold on,
I'll tell you where. First point here. This is the top part.
Okay, I gotta get an inch away. Okay. Oh man.
You know, as far away as you want.
It's an inch. It says it's accurate.
No, it's a laser. It's a fucking laser.
It's not a laser. It's infrared. The laser's just for aiming.
Use a laser
and
aim,
Joey.
Okay.
That says 99.
Now go down here.
That says 97.
What? It's hotter down here than up there.
Well, it's an infrared thermometer. It's not exactly super reliable.
So for people just listening on this podcast, Will has the Raytech temperature gun. And judging the back of the BlackBerry playbook, it's about 99 degrees Fahrenheit.
So it's a little bit warmer than body temperature.
Yeah, but human body.
Yeah. So that's the playbook. Of course, full review coming probably, 2 weeks, I would guess, on this?
I mean, there's no point in waiting for when the real apps come out.
We'll revisit it then, probably.
But, yeah, we'll probably revisit it.
What I hope is that BlackBerry doesn't use the Android, I don't know if emulation is the right word, but the Android launcher as an excuse to not try and develop their own.
No. They would never do that. They want first-party apps.
Again, though, how do you get a foothold? There's so many developers out there. Their priority right now is obviously going to be with iOS and Android,
that's the big
where
question.
They think they can sell apps in volume. How do you get a developer who's got a hot app? Like, let's say you want Angry Birds on this. You go to the Angry Birds guys. How do you convince them that it's worth putting that on your device that no one's buying?
You create an SDK that's easy to make to port.
But they still have to devote resources to it.
The thing I think that's going to happen is they're going to go end around from the corporate. So I think they're going to try to get these out into their corporate customers. And from there, they'll get those guys to develop in-house apps and build market share. And once the market share is there, people will want to be on the platform with the entertainment and other apps.
And hey, it comes with a pouch.
Well, Apple, I hope it succeeds because I think it's a great. It looks like a great device.
That's a surprisingly even-keeled response from you, Gary Whitta.
From a dyed-in-the-wool Apple Kool-Aid guy
the official
like
Apple fanboy of Tested.com. Other thing we missed last week, Friday morning, Wii HD rumors. Or Wii 2.
These are flying around like nobody's business.
There's crazy stuff out there.
Have you seen some of these controller mock-ups?
Yeah, I hate
renders. That's mock-ups are
yeah,
so
those
bad.
Are people on forums with my coming up with
that's
crazy
why they're not
well,
real product
IGN
designers.
IGN put one up that looked ridiculous. I mean, this is what they do.
Yeah.
It's always funny after the system actually comes out to go back and look at the mock-ups.
Yeah.
Well, they did it for
they're
the iPhone
They're always
also.
So wrong.
Do you remember when before the iPhone 1 came out?
Yeah.
And there were rumors of a video device or some type of iPod video player and with a video overlay. Those mock-ups were the craze, and none of them were right.
Well, there was the iPad stuff was the same way.
Oh, yeah.
There's been all the crazy two-screen iPhones and iPads, and I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
But I'm liking some of the big picture stuff that I'm hearing about. Obviously, HD.
Right.
Which, yay, Nintendo finally catches up with 2006. Well,
so here's the thing. It seems like Nintendo's living on a five-year cycle, and Sony and Microsoft are kind of maybe
they're
maybe
in.
Not.
They're in for a couple more years.
Haul.
Yeah.
So it looks like we're looking at an HD version of the Wii, not a substantially, more powerful than the 360 or PS3. But that's not that hard these days.
But that's a big deal because right now the Wii is substantially less powerful than those systems.
Yeah, but it's just going to put them in the bottom generation of the next generation.
The same tech as a GameCube for graphics rendering.
Yeah.
But I
hate to be a snob about it, but it's hard to do when you're playing other games on the 360 and the Wii and you're watching movies in HD. It's hard to go to play a Wii game and not feel like
even if you get the component cables, you 480p as opposed to 480i,
it doesn't help
at all. Yeah, so
I think the thing is the kinds of games I'm playing first party Nintendo games. They're all flat shaded, so it doesn't matter what they look like.
Well,
as long as they're not
flat shaded, is what it's interesting because that means if they do a Wii HD and it's backward compatible, you can put in Super Mario Galaxy and it'll instantly look so much better.
Well, yeah, be wonderful.
I haven't done this, but I've heard on the internet that if you use that Dolphin emulator for Wii games, they look really awesome on PC.
I've seen some screenshots.
Yeah.
And that's actually part of the reason why I've been putting off playing Super Mario Galaxy 2. As much as Super Mario Galaxy is one of my favorite games of all time.
Yeah. You're saving it.
My enjoyment of it was always held back by the fact that, oh my God, how much better would this look in HD?
Hold on. So just to be clear, you bought that game. It's sitting probably still in shrink wrap in your entertainment center.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the Wii 2 comes out, you're going to go out and buy a Wii HD and then buy the game again in the HD version.
Well, hopefully you won't have to.
But the Wii HD won't just upscale it, will it? The existing game.
This is
by the HD remaster?
I'm sure, yeah.
No, maybe a patch. I would be really pissed off if Nintendo re-released at full price.
If the Wii, I don't know if this is even technologically possible. If the new Wii, the Super Wii, whatever you want to call it, upscaled all your old Wii games,
that would be such a selling point.
Well, it's going to do that. It's going to do that.
Is it?
But there'll be an HD version that looks better.
I don't know how automatic or easy that process is.
I think Nintendo would be stupid because
to new Super Mario Brothers Wii HD Extreme.
No.
Yeah.
They've got to do something. I spent more time standing in line for the Wii than I did playing it. And and part of the reason is, I mean, I'm a bad HD snob. As I've said before, if there's some shitty program in HD
on I've seen
one
you
channel,
watching terrible
and actually
things
something
in HD
good
before.
In standard definition, I will watch the shitty HD stuff. And that's a problem that I've...
But you won't do that for 3D.
What's the worst thing you've watched for HD that was when there's something else good in standard def?
I think
you've told me horrible things.
I think Mega Piranha maybe.
Oh wow. God! Wow. So you went to sci-fi over real content.
So anything shot with like a red camera, you like I have to see what it looks like.
Yes.
On the TV.
Yes, basically.
Yeah. Good. Lots of documentaries, History Channel stuff.
So Nintendo would be the first ones out of the gate with the next generation.
I don't know if this counts. I think this might be them just catching up to this generation.
Well, no, but that's the thing. I think they've got to offer something.
I mean,
beyond.
The thing is, we're reaching a point where the 360 is starting to feel a little long in the tooth. I mean, I think
most people are happy though. I'm not.
No, people
really
are totally happy with
the
360.
This is what's really interesting. Usually, at the end, towards the end of a generation, about this far in, people are crying out for the next generation.
Yeah. I don't think they are.
I go onto gaming communities and talk to people online or whatever, I'm not seeing that. People are like, this is good enough for me.
Mortal Kombat looks awesome.
A lot of people are saying they don't want the next generation yet.
Fighting games always look awesome. Fighting games and racing games always look really good. The thing,
but just think how much better the next generation would look.
So
I don't need it right now. having so much fun with Mortal Kombat right now.
The other side is there's a lot of inertia on the current generation. I have bought more Rock Band songs than I care to admit. And if they're not going to carry over to the next generation Xbox so that I can keep playing Rock Band 3, I'm going to have an Xbox plugged into my living room forever.
And on the corporate side, there's not a lot of incentive.
Well, the Xbox is still selling better than everything else.
Absolutely. Microsoft has put years and billions of dollars into building a massive Xbox 360 installed base.
Right.
Xbox Live, the whole ecosystem, everything they've got going. And now, you know, and now they've got that huge installed base. They make a lot of money on the software.
Mm-hmm. On the other
hand, you're asking them to clear out that installed base, start again from scratch. They lose money selling the hardware initially. They're in a sweet position right now.
They don't have to.
Why start over?
Because
there's no hardware in it.
Because it's cheap old hardware.
Here's the thing to think about, though. Dev cycle on a game is 18 months to 2 years now, mm-hmm. right? Easy. So if they want to have a Xbox 720 or Xbox 3 or whatever out in December, in Christmas of 2012, development on those games has to have started very soon now.
Yes.
And that would be, when did the Xbox come out? 2005?
Late 2005.
Right. So if that would be a 7 year cycle between the launch to launch on that console.
See, I think you're gonna be looking at more of a 10 year cycle.
Yeah. 720p is gonna get real 480p ish by 10 years by 2015.
But what? Why though?
I don't think so. I think a lot of people are still playing Xboxes on not even HD, not even 720p.
I mean, I know for a fact that some of, I don't want to out anybody because I don't know if he's talked about it publicly, but some people that work in this building are feeling the age of the Xbox when they started playing PC games and seeing what Battlefield 3 and Portal 2 and those games look like, even when they're the same same generation, just upscaled, higher resolution textures, higher resolution.
Well, yeah, but you've got to remember, you're never going to be able to get those high resolutions on a TV anyway.
You can run 1920 by 1080.
Yes.
You're not running at 1280. I mean, Xbox 360 is outputting almost everything at 720p these days.
There's internal scalar, so it's rendering at 720p,
well, right.
Outputting at 1080i, 1080p.
But you're still. Yeah. I mean, whether there's a scalar or not, it's 720p.
And also, you've got to remember, most people can't. Maybe this is less true in games, but with movies, unless you've got a really huge TV, most people can't tell the difference between 720p and 1080p.
I wouldn't know about that.
You've got a smaller TV.
Right. I mean, right. I have a clearly inadequate TV. I know.
You probably can't tell the difference. I might be able to.
Ford Focus.
I think we live in the good enough generation, and
yeah.
720p is good enough and better than the standard right now.
But the Wii is not good enough.
No, agreed.
That's what we're seeing.
The jump from 480 to 720 is significant. From 720 to 1080,
it's depressing.
The margins
we're talking
about
four times as many pixels from 720,
right.
480 to 720.
480 to 720.
The other thing I'm liking that I'm hearing in these rumors is that I think, again, who knows? They're rumors. But what seems to, the picture that seems to be emerging is...
Those rumors started out relatively sane. You know, HD Wii, higher resolution waggle,
right.
All that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then they quickly got crazy fucking bananas.
Oh, yeah. When you get into the controller business and all the crazy stuff about touch screens in the controllers and weird stuff, but the...
Soul recognition.
But going back to what sounded when we were still in the sensible part of it, was talking about, I think this was from the original Game Informer reporting, Nintendo trying to break this cycle that you see with every Nintendo console, which is there's a handful of great Nintendo games every year, and then third parties don't know what to do with it. And we've seen that's been more of a problem with the Wii than with any other system.
Challenge for Nintendo on all of their platforms.
Right, so what we're hearing now is the rumor is that Nintendo is going to be more aggressively courting third parties and trying to get third parties behind their system as much as they are behind the 360.
Is that going to happen also with like the Kinect?
The thing is, there's some companies that are good at developer relations, and there's some companies that aren't. I mean, in the PC world, NVIDIA has always spent a lot of money and a lot of effort on developer relations, and as a result, that the way it's meant to be played thing, whether you think it's a good idea or a bad idea, has resulted in some really good games.
Dedicated teams were developers. John Carmack, he actually did an interview recently saying he likes NVIDIA not be over ATI, not just because. Like the bench, he hasn't done like official benchmarking.
It's not because of hardware.
No, not at all. It's because he can get on the phone and ask the guy, you know, can I put these features in my game, in my engine, and will you guys develop hardware to support it?
Well, which hardware will this work on? I mean, they can go back and tell you. And that's someplace that ATI's fallen down, someplace where Nintendo's fallen down, and someplace where Sony's fallen down.
Well,
Microsoft has been good at it traditionally.
And the problem Nintendo, I think, particularly had with the Wii is because they introduced a unique control scheme.
Yeah.
They were asking developers, let's say like Madden, it's not like EA can just port 360 PS3 or Mortal Kombat, a game like that, it's basically the same version on both machines.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the Wii version, they have to rebuild the game around a whole different control scheme, and that's a big hassle.
And since the third parties probably have less time with the games than the in-house teams, because Miyamoto knew what the Wii was going to be 2 years before EA did. So, I mean, they have more time to work on it. And the third party guys are left to kind of figure it out as they go along. You end up with stuff like Red Dawn, Red Steel.
Yeah, and they had to plus they got to scale down all their assets. They don't have hard drive storage and all the other things they can rely on with the other systems. That will go away with this new with the new Wii HD. Presumably they'll be proper storage and HD graphics and all the things that we expect from the other systems. Mm-hmm. But if there is still going to be some kind of loony motion control or whatever, I think it's hard for third parties to get really excited about that, because on the one hand you got to get your head around I think a lot of developers never really got their head around Wii Motion. It was kind of like nice gimmick, but a lot of people didn't really want to build games around it,
and I don't think people really knew what it was going to be until they saw grandparents in the living room bowling,
right?
That was a switch flip moment, I think, for a lot of the developers.
But that's
community.
The problem is that for so many people, that's all the Wii ever was a Wii sports machine,
right a single serving console.
Yeah.
So let's run the rumors. I think that all those visual controllers and the touchscreen controllers and all that's crazy talk.
Yep.
So I don't think there'll be a touchscreen.
Oh, let's start making declarations.
Here's the part where we make ridiculous predictions. Yeah.
Since this podcast isn't being archived, you're free to say whatever you want.
No, it's going to be up on the site.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So this could be held against you in the future.
Yeah. HD. Well, let's just do feature by feature.
Okay.
HD, absolutely.
That's
no
a
doubt.
Lock.
Yeah. Probably 1080p support, I would guess, because they're going to want this to last for a significant period of time. I wouldn't be surprised if they support 3D, given their 3D proclivities on the handheld
side. Well, yes, but Nintendo only did 3D because they could do it in a unique way. On a big screen, you cannot do that.
That's true.
Without the glasses, but you don't want to go down that rabbit
hole. The life of this console, it's very real possibility that there will be
so it'll be a checkbox, but 3D. Not like a feature.
Not something they're going to push.
Okay. So
maybe on the touchscreen. Maybe
the 3DS
screen on the Wii controller.
No, that's such a bad idea. You're going from down here to up there, 3D, 2D on your big screen TV. That's not good.
I want that.
No, you don't.
No, I don't.
You think E3 coming out end of this year?
I think that there'll be an announcement at E3 with release this year, and at least in Japan. Maybe.
I don't think it'll be released this year. I think there'll be an announcement at E3. I don't think you'll see
it. If you look at Wii sales, they've kind of not been doing so well the last year. There's a reason. The Xbox 360 isn't outselling the Wii because the Xbox 360 is doing awesome. It's because the Wii isn't selling like it was last year.
No, the Wii is clearly coming towards the end of its life, I think. Its useful life. I think, they'll drop it to $99 at some point soon, and then it'll have a nice little long tail after that, same way the PS2 did.
Yeah.
Because, again, we talk about that $99 barrier.
Yeah, exactly. At that point, you buy one to take to the lake house and so the kids can play bowling when
they're at
nighttime.
And you can do Netflix and that's
like that.
All that stuff's good.
The coup would be if the Wii and the Wii HD run the same game, same disc, so you can have the $99 Wii if you want it as a gift. That's like the 360 Arcade, the dumbed down version. But then you can still buy Zelda and put on either system.
Backwards compatibility will definitely be a thing.
Yes, but if that upscaling thing could really happen, that would be very exciting.
Well, I mean, that can happen. There's no reason
that doesn't just make it compatible. That really breathes new life into all those old games. I just don't know if it's actually technically.
That would make us wait day one for Wii HD.
Yes.
Because so you can go back and play the Nintendo games.
And then they would have it already, like, an inventory of 12 awesome games.
I would go back and replay Super Mario Galaxy.
I would buy them, finally.
Yeah.
Onboard storage. I think a large quantity of flash. I don't think Nintendo's going to put a hard drive in a console, ever.
Well, I think aren't we done with moving part hard drives in the next generation's going to be solid state drives, right?
I don't think they're going to be too the cost will be still. Low yeah. in two.
But by the time
the next generation is 5 years away, yes. If the next generation is 2 years away, no.
It's way cheap enough for a 200 gig, 500 gig
hard
drive.
I mean, you'll put a terabyte drive in a console 2 years from now.
Right.
Especially when games take up, like the DLC games, the arcade games take up so much space now.
It's going to have a disc, though. You're going to be able to put discs in this thing.
Well, that was one of the out there rumors, though, was no physical media.
Because you know who has done really well with their online distribution system? Which of the three... let's see what the chat thinks about this. Corey, which of the three platforms do people in the chat feel have done the best with the content delivery system online? Nintendo, Sony, or Microsoft? Has anybody said Nintendo yet?
That's a bit of a delay, so
wait a second. Everyone is saying Steam.
Steam. Okay.
Oh, so, out of the box.
There we
answer.
Go.
Very
yeah.
So PS3.
And of course, interesting that we'd be discussing this in the same week that the world's first non-physical media console is going to be going out
gone.
Of business.
The PSP Go.
PSP Go.
Oh, oh yeah.
No more PSP Go.
That didn't work.
Yeah.
Well, for Sony.
Yes. Right. Correct.
Any wild out there? I mean, I think it's too early to get anything crazy.
No, there'll be
more rumors.
There will be a disc drive.
I think there has to be a disc drive so you can play DVDs.
Yeah.
I don't think there'll be a Blu-ray drive.
Again, Nintendo didn't care about that with the Wii. You still can't play
DVDs. Well, they did in Japan.
Okay.
In Japan, it played DVDs. Here, it did not.
Okay.
I think motion controllers are here to stay on the Wii. I think we'll see the weird hybrid
double down on the motion.
I mean, motion's been good. I think they'll probably do something to mix up motion.
If they're serious about courting third-party developers and they want people to be able to port their Call of Duties and Mortal Kombat, so what have you,
right.
Then there has to be a traditional element to the controller.
Yeah.
Maybe you can detach a part and wave it around, but there has to be a good old-fashioned thumbsticks configuration.
I have to say, I like the classic controller with the SNES pad and
but
all
again,
that. That works really well for me.
As long as that's an optional thing you have to buy separately.
Oh, you think it needs to be in the box?
I think it needs to
you
be in the box.
You think it needs to be a Wiimote, a nunchuck, and the classic?
That's asking a lot. I think they need to position it as a competitor to the Roku, Boxy Box.
You think full streaming services and apps?
Full streaming services and apps.
That's crazy. Yeah. That's
I think it needs to be the
happen.
Best. They want to be the best Netflix player.
That's so far from everything Nintendo's ever hinted that they're interested in.
No, but the 3DS, I mean, the 3DS, you're supposed to be able to get movie trailers and TV shows, 3D ones, Netflix in 3D
that's the
on
first
the 3DS.
Hint. I was actually really surprised when I saw Netflix was on 3DS.
So why not on the Wii HD?
All right.
Will there be a unified friends list?
No.
Well, there'll be a thing with 16-digit code, like the 3DS.
God.
Shared across all the games, but you're not going to have a gamer tag equivalent or
ICQ.
Achievements or anything like that.
Every console that Nintendo has done since the GameCube has offered one feature that is the flagship, radically unique feature.
Inane.
DS had two screens.
Yes.
The Wii had Wii Motion. 3DS had 3D.
Yeah.
I feel like I don't know if the patterns are going to continue, but what is that for this machine? Because simply bringing all the things that other systems already have is not going to do it. The question is, what does Nintendo offer this time around that's unique? I hope it's not that thing that you stick your finger in.
The biometric sensor.
Oh, that would have to be a joke. Right?
Norm, every time you adjust your tie, it crinkles, you know.
Awesome.
Yeah. That would be crazy talk. I have no idea what it would be. I mean, I mean maybe they are going to do some sort of crazy, you know. The thing is, they have an ecosystem of handheld devices with screens. They all are internet connected. They all have, I don't know if the 3DS has Bluetooth, but I would assume it probably does because those chips are cheap. I would think that probably that stuff's all going to be connected and you're going to use your 3DS more. Like, it seems to me that having a 3DS work with the Wii HD in some sort of intelligent way as a controller would solve a lot of the problems that we've talked about with not having classic controllers and all that, except for the fact that you have to buy a $250 console
that's the thing.
To be the controller for your $250 console.
Yeah, well, then you're getting back into those bad old days of people plugging Game Boys into their
Man, I like Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles.
Nobody
Anybody
to
who
do
doesn't
that.
Like that can go to hell. That was fun when you had four people.
Did you?
The one
time
I played
do that?
The one time
yeah,
I
exactly,
played it.
Exactly, one time.
I only ever had four people together. One time that it worked, but it was awesome.
That reminds me of the
Everybody
time we tried to play iPhone, iPad, Scrabble.
Oh, that was a disaster.
With our iPhones. That was a nightmare.
You know what I deleted last night from my iPhone? The Tray app. I was like, I'm never going to use this again. This is a terrible experience.
Yeah.
I don't need to have this
You
anymore.
Need that slot in your folder for something better.
I expunged it from the computer. It's no longer on there. I have to re-download it.
That's the right call.
Any questions from the chat, Corey, about the Wii HD stuff? Is your mic up?
Am I good?
Yep.
Nothing much
good.
About the Wii HD. Actually, why in the world would Nintendo announce a new home console right after 3DS and when the Wii hasn't had a full price drop yet?
I think they don't. I mean, I don't think they feel like the Wii. I think what is the price on the Wii now? Is it $199?
Yeah.
So I think they're probably pretty happy with where the Wii is. I think they'll do the Wii price drop. Well, the Wii has had a price drop because it started at
$250. I think you might see one this holiday.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll see a $99, $150 Wii this holiday.
I think they could go to $149 this holiday.
I almost think the smart thing that they would do is bundle in some accessories or games and keep it at $199. So they'll do like a Mario Kart, Super Mario Galaxy, or new stuff that is stuff that the attach rate naturally will be low, but they can put a sweet bundle in there and kind of jack up the price a little bit.
The Costco
give you
style.
A couple controllers.
So the Costco bundle.
Costco type bundle. But maybe a little bit better games than you typically get in the Costco bundle.
I don't think they'll do that.
I think that they don't feel that the 3DS and the home console are really competitive.
Nintendo's been able to, you know, we talk about HD and all the things that we want it to do. Nintendo's been able to sweep all those criticisms aside for a long time because the sales have just been gangbusters for the longest time.
Well, the way they've sold that is with the promise of, hey, your kids right now are spending all of their time sitting in their dark rooms shooting people in the face, and we're going to have a fun family activity with video games instead of playing Call of Duty all the time.
Even old people can play it.
Right. And
is that a reality, though?
I mean, when I go home at Christmas time, we all gather around my sister's Wii and chuck the old bowling ball. It is a thing that happens every year.
Right.
I enjoy it. It's fun. Everybody gets a little cocktailed, and you know, and then we drive home through the snow and a mile and a half, and somebody has to be the designated driver, and
those Wii Sports parties are a lot of fun. And it's
you had a Wii Sports party that was a hell of a lot of fun.
It was tremendous fun, and it's interesting, isn't it, how despite their best efforts, Microsoft and Sony have not really been able to replicate that fun family party atmosphere. They've tried. They've released party games and motion controllers. Something is not translating over.
Had Sony or Microsoft released the motion controls before Nintendo and before the novelty wore off of having a bowling party, then people would have done it. It would have worked then. But you can't say, oh man, you know it was awesome. The iPhone came out 2 years ago. We should release something that's just like the iPhone. And it doesn't work that way.
That's not what happens.
So speaking of the iPhone, I forgot to put this on the list, but this is kind of a big story. Apple is suing Samsung. For I can't remember what the technical term, the legal term is.
Isn't it because the tab
ripping us off.
Phone?
Yeah, well, no.
The Galaxy S looks almost exactly like the iPhone.
It's a fit and finish is what they're suing. It's there's trademarks and there's copyright, and those trademarks is your name. Galaxy S is a trademark. iPhone's a trademark. Copyright is the copyright doesn't apply here. Patent is the physical hardware and software on the device. This fit and finish stuff has to do with the kind of small touches that go around
the packaging,
the packaging,
UI,
the
icons,
place you put the buttons, right. The way the icons look. I mean, if you recall, when I first got the Galaxy S phones, I looked at TouchWiz and was like, man, this is, they have chiclets. The icons are chiclets.
Yes.
They pull the color from the icon. It really, they're like, instead of going up and down, like the app tray usually works on Android phones, it went side to side.
Yes.
And they had the springboard.
Now, of course, every smartphone that's come out since the iPhone has looked a bit like
they're
the
all
iPhone
black.
Because
they're all 16:9.
The iPhone created a totally new language for what phones should look like.
Yeah.
So everyone copied it a little bit. The Galaxy S does, in the pictures that I've seen, does look uncannily like the iPhone.
It's a little more. I don't think people are confusing. I don't think people confuse the Galaxy S with the iPhone.
It's close enough.
No, I don't think they're tricking anyone into thinking they're getting an iPhone.
So what are they leeching off of? I mean, Samsung is, or
because
Apple is
Apple
Samsung's
put a lot of time
biggest,
and effort into
customers.
Creating a unique experience with the fit and finish and the UI. If someone just comes along and just steals it and puts it in their phone, you got to sue them.
Especially, but the funny thing here, the place that this gets weird, and if you want to see, we did a write-up about this, but the guys at This Is My Next website, podcast, whatever, I don't know what the site's called, but Josh Topolsky's new thing, Nile did a great write-up about like the lawyery analysis of it, because he used to be a lawyer. I have no idea where I was going with this.
Aren't all these companies suing each other all the time, like every which way?
Well, that's part of it. But the thing is, Samsung is a huge partner for Apple.
Yes.
They provide displays, they provide CPUs, they provide memory, they provide flash, all sorts of stuff Samsung sells.
But they're
Apple.
Different departments.
Well, it is different departments. Samsung's a huge company, Apple's a huge company,
but that,
obviously.
But that relationship, that vendor relationship,
right.
is so beneficial to both parties that they can also sue each other at the same time.
And everybody's cool with it.
Yeah. And Apple is suing Samsung Mobile, their mobile division, and that's where the miscommunication happened. And I think Tim Cook made some statements about it during the earnings report. And it's just, it's a lot of miscommunication. Apple is, you know, protecting their design, their brand, and I think it'll be resolved. I don't think it'll go to court. Samsung has launched a countersuit. But I think, I mean, Samsung's phones now clearly, if you look at the Nexus S, you can't confuse the Nexus S with the iPhone. If you look at the Captivate, if you look at even the Galaxy S2, I don't think you could argue that that's a huge ripoff on the iPhone. And Apple did receive the patent for the iPhone 4 design recently. And they're just doing their due diligence.
Right. I mean, that's the thing is they have to protect this stuff. I think it's a little lame. I mean, it's the kind of thing that's probably going to end up with Samsung countersuing Apple, and then both sides meeting somewhere in the middle with some sort of cross-licensing agreement, and everybody will be cool. And Samsung will say, oh, we're not going to use boxes that slide on like the iPhone 4
yeah,
Max does
yeah,
anymore.
Yeah. I don't think Apple sees any huge threat from Samsung because of this.
That's pretty much there's a lot of other smaller news.
I want to talk about one more news.
I've got on the gaming front, Alienware announced
yep.
new M series gaming laptops.
Everyone has always asked about this yeah. in every podcast. Like, you know, when's the next M11X coming out? Well, this
it's
week,
out.
It's out. You can buy it now. $1,000. The old M11X got lowered down like $799 or $699.
Don't buy that.
Don't get that one. New one, same form factor. 11.6-inch screen, 1366
by 768. Is it the same design? Does it look exactly the same?
Looks pretty much exactly the same. The guts are better.
Is it Sandy Bridge?
It's HDMI 1.4. I don't know if it's Sandy Bridge. I want to say yes, it is. Intel Core i5-2537M. I'm not exactly sure if that's Sandy Bridge.
Where does the M line up?
And then the graphics is a GeForce 540M.
Okay.
So
how does that... How does that stack up in the PC gaming
modern world?
Yeah, is that going to do the job on pretty much everything else?
Yeah. So the balance on these games is that they usually put the GPU in that they need to run most stuff at native resolution for the panel that's attached to the laptop.
Yeah,
so
probably what a lot of people want to do is plug it into.
You're
going to
plug
screen,
a second
right?
monitor in, so you'll be able to play at 1280 by 720 in everything.
With HDMI, I think you're going to do 720p easy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 1366 by 768, so it's already high resolution. I think you'll be able to do 1080 with some things turned down. There are also two new Alienware models, the M14X, M18X. M18X looks ridiculous. It is massive. And
it's something you need a special backpack.
That's
a Samsonite
type.
Bag.
That's the big workstation, the mobile workstation / gaming rig.
But the M14X looks kind of interesting. If you're carrying a 15-inch notebook right now, that's a 5-pound... gaming laptop that looks like it's pretty good. So we're going to see if we can get one or both of those in to test out, and there'll be more later.
And M14X is only $1,200 to start.
Yeah. Let's see, a couple of small hits. You already said the PSP Go is dead. Seagate buys Samsung's hard drive division. Basically now, how many companies are making hard drives? Western Digital, Seagate, and is Toshiba sold last year? Is Hitachi still making hard drives?
Hitachi also sold.
Not. Worst hard drive crash I ever had was Hitachi.
The
Death Star.
Yeah.
Worst data loss I ever suffered.
I think it's pretty much just WD and Seagate.
I think there's one more company.
Well,
Samsung sold. Oh, sorry, I just said Samsung sold. Anyway, the question here is this the last of the horseless carriage manufacturers selling? As the Ford and the automobiles come online, is that what we're seeing? Is the movable storage industry consolidating before its eventual
sure.
oof?
I think you argue that as long as prices are low. I mean, I think the margins are pretty low, but both of those companies now are putting so many resources into
it's all
SSD.
Flash, yeah,
and SSD, but they're also not the leaders in flash. It's all the companies had good RAM contacts, actually.
That candle that Vinny lit really smells terrible.
I can't smell anything.
It's Gary, you're lucky.
And we have three candles left.
What is it?
Those three candles on that one plate, that should represent one of each of us. And I'm going to make a bet that yours is going to go out first. Yours is the one on the far left. Gary, you're on the far right. Mine the middle. Mine will stay on the longest.
That is some good gambling there, Norm. Other small hits. WinPhone 7 Mango update confirmed for fall. AT&T got updates yesterday or day before for LG and Samsung Focus. So the two Windows Phone 7 phones. The Focus actually got two updates in one day or within a short order. And that was kind of an interesting process. I updated the phone that we have here in the office. And you basically plug it into the Zune software and it kind of just runs an update.
Yeah, you did it for Brad. It
takes like 40 minutes. Yeah, Brad's been using our Focus since his iPhone 3G kind of sucks. So that's good. Mango is coming in the fall. That, of course, is the big one with the IE9. But Focus owners can now get copy and paste if you hook up to Zune. HBO Go.
Let's talk about Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Tangent.
Hold on. I haven't watched Game of Thrones.
You have not watched it yet.
No spoilers.
You've seen it.
I've seen it.
But you didn't watch it on first night.
No, I was a day behind everyone else. But I did see it.
Okay.
Time shifting. It's the future.
Yeah, welcome to 1997, Norm.
How awesome is it, Gary?
It's great. I'm a big fan of the books. And I thought so far it looks like they're doing an excellent, very faithful job with the adaptation. movie quality production values.
Yeah. Shot on film?
I can't tell. I think maybe shot digitally.
Okay.
But
high resolution digital. Yeah, obviously. Beautiful. Yeah.
Without spoiling, it is totally worth watching. I don't know if I recommend it for my mom. Definitely not for kids.
I think the big
or
test.
Or sexy.
Both.
Ooh. At the same time?
Almost in sync with each other.
Oh,
every time it got a little sexy, it got a little violent.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every scene there, yeah.
The big test that it seemed to pass is that people who aren't familiar with the books are getting into it. It's obviously people like us who know every beat in the story.
Well, I don't.
Oh, okay.
I like being on that side. It's amazing. I'm enjoying it as a TV series first, but I do hear people complaining, people who are
well,
hardcore
because
fans.
It's its own, it's any like any fantasy world. It has its own very detailed history and geography, and all these characters, so many different characters, a huge cast of characters. You haven't even met like one quarter of the people in the story yet. Mm-hmm. Even though I was able to follow it and watch it very easily, my concern was are people who aren't into
it. Yeah, well, it's like Walking Dead had the same problem because there's a lot of characters in Walking Dead, and they get introduced really quickly in the show. And then, whether people are going to be able to keep up that haven't actually watched the show before.
It's so much better than Walking Dead.
Wow, really?
So much better.
I'm going to have to read the books. My plan is to read the books and then watch the Blu-ray when it comes out.
I'm going to read the books after.
Okay.
Already picked up for a second season.
13 episodes, first season, it's just the first book. 13 weeks later, I can start reading the book. Get it on a Kindle. So HBO Go.
Yeah, let's talk about the tech
side. It's a service that exists already. You can go on their website right now, and you can watch some of their shows on demand.
And it's if you're a subscriber, right?
If you're a subscriber. Yeah.
But the way they do it is kind of weird. You have to pick your provider, and with Comcast, you actually have to go through Xfinity's website, which sucks.
Yeah.
But they actually show this trailer for HBO Go, the new one, during Game of Thrones this past Sunday. Mm. And what it is basically they're going to release the Android and iPad, iPhone app, iOS apps.
That's good. That's coming next month.
Coming May 2nd, I think. And
that's great. As an HBO subscriber, I'm going to want. Now, if you're not an HBO subscriber, can you pay just for an online subscription?
No, you cannot.
That's
still through your provider. Yeah.
Now, that does kind of suck because there are people that want to watch, say, Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. but don't want to have to buy a whole HBO subscription to get it.
That's not how they pay for Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
They pay for it both
by selling subscriptions.
Money, money, money.
Is another way they can sell subscriptions.
Like, because Comcast will cut their deal down if they start.
That's why it's not going to be on iTunes for a long time.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones isn't on iTunes?
No.
No way.
No, the only stuff that's on iTunes from HBO is owned by outside production houses like Curb Your Enthusiasm. And
Entourage.
And when it's out on Blu-ray, then you can buy the digital version.
Right.
Yeah. Other small hits, Android released a Sonos app for their
They had actually announced this for
boxes.
A long time, but now there's
it's
a new
finally
one
out
for Android. Yeah. The iOS version has AirPlay.
I tested the iOS version last year. Mm-hmm. This looks very similar. Seems like it's a little fancier. Yeah.
Sonos
I
don't know too many for people rich people, isn't it?
It is. That's the thing.
Sonos, I mean, if you want central music in your house, Sonos is, I think, the
if
best
you,
way to it, do
it. It's not for people who live in single... story dwellings.
Right. If you live in big houses.
Yeah. If you live in your computer is next to your bed, you don't need a Sonos.
If you can call the rooms in your house zones and not sound like a jackass.
Yes.
Then,
like my house,
you're going to sound like a jackass either way. But
my house is 1,000 square feet. It is too small for Sonos.
Yeah.
But what you can do with Sonos is have one zone in the patio, one zone in the kitchen, one zone in the living room, one zone in the bedroom. And you can control each one individually and put music in different
ones. I'm sick of your hip-hop. I'm going to go to the other zone.
Billy, stop listening to your Disney radio crap.
Hey, can you toss me some Johnny Cash in the zone?
God damn it. And then the last rumor, the oft-mentioned, long-looked-for, still-missing, white iPhone 4, rumored to appear April 26th.
We're hearing it's coming. That's only 5 days away.
5 days. If your math is correct, it is 5 days from today.
Which means that somewhere there are white iPhones sitting in a box waiting to be shipped.
Dude, there's white iPhones all over the campus in Cupertino that people have been carrying them for a year.
Well, but obviously, Cupertino.
Does anyone really care about white iPhone?
The thing is, if they release white iPhone on April 26th, either it is the biggest jack move ever, because then there's going to be a new iPhone in July.
How many iPhone 4? No, there's
not. Well, no, not until the fall is what we're hearing, right?
September is what we're hearing. But
still, you'd be a sucker to buy one still.
Last July. Verizon iPhone.
Yeah.
White Verizon iPhone.
Yeah.
And then possibly this fall's white Verizon iPhone 5 with
Unified.
Dual GSM CDMA. running A5 and iOS 5.
I think a lot of people are going to be very... I think the white iPhone will be very successful. Although, having said that, you are probably foolish to buy one.
I love my white iPad. I got to say, I was a big doubter on the white iPad, and the white iPad's pretty rad.
Again, why not jump in and get it, though, unless you're not confident that the next iPhone's going to be a big step up?
Yeah.
The next iPhone's probably going to be just a 4GS, right?
I think the iOS 5
I'm making shruggy shoulders.
iOS 5 is probably going to be the big change.
I'm at maximum shrug.
iOS 5, we're hearing that it's the same form factor, which is surprising because they got so much shit for the
different back material. Different materials.
Yeah, but it was the antenna on the outside. Remember antenna gate? People don't remember that.
No,
anymore.
No, we remember. I remember every time my phone drops a call and that I have to have this doofy case on my phone in order to use it as a telephone.
So you'd think that would be a reason for them to...
In theory.
Put the antenna back inside.
Is Apple still giving out free cases?
No.
That
stopped in September.
Period.
Okay.
If you weren't an early adopter, then you knew what you were getting into and fuck off.
Yeah.
So that's it for news. I'm done with news.
Hey.
Let's get to the tangent. I should mention this. We had a big discussion on the forums. I don't know if you guys read it, but some people expressed displeasure in the number
big discussion.
Of tangents.
So were people yelling in the forums
of what?
At you? Was
number
this a Will versus... The Will versus the Formers discussion?
No.
Well, on this last podcast?
No.
People loved the last podcast.
Oh my God.
People really enjoyed
it. Loved it. It was the best McGriddle. Gary
high five.
Best podcast ever.
Oh God.
I called it right.
I am so against it. I heard this.
I can mute both of you.
During this entire
podcast. This could just be the Will Smith show.
That we've been recording this past hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And Will's been fiddling with the thing. I can tell. With his screen on there, he's trying to keep us on track because he's so afraid of the backlash.
No.
Backlash.
No, so
was good.
So okay,
positive.
This is only a test section of the forum, not in the podcast thread. There was a respectful request from a reader.
There was one post
from someone who said, "Man, I don't like these tangents." And then everyone came to defend the podcast and say, "Hey, if you don't like it, listen to Leo Laporte."
However, when we got to the end,
bloody right,
yeah. I'm not talking shit about Leo because I like Leo. I think he's a nice guy. Mm-hmm. When we got to the end of the show, when we got to the end of the thread, basically what people were saying was, I like the tangents. However, the news section doesn't have to be so tangential. So what we've done...
Well, okay, no. The news section last week
was especially
tangential.
I'm lasering.
I'm 105 degrees. I'm livid right now.
You're 83.
That's right. The temperature is going up as his fever rises.
It was
tangential last week because last week was a shit news.
Shit news week, yes.
And
definitely.
We gave that caveat out before.
We warned people.
I'd be willing to
concede that we pushed the limits of the tangentiality.
That is the far scale.
It was the McGriddle. You can't have a McGriddle and not really inject.
Because I think we went the first 30 or 40 minutes without anyone. No one would be able to tell that there was a tech.
I went back. I was so nervous about that show. I posted it. I downloaded it to the phone. Listen to it on the car ride home.
Your lack of faith is a story.
Yeah, and then you messaged me to say how great you thought it was.
Yeah, exactly. But literally, I didn't complete one sentence before we were off on a tangent. I had introduced Norm, I'd introduced Gary, then Tangent City USA.
You started talking about Gingham. You invite it.
I know. I'm part of the problem. I'm the first to admit it. However, we're going to try a new format. We're going to try just switching things around a little bit. So we moved the tangenty sections to the end of the podcast.
And they're not tangents.
But isn't that what we have anyway? Fake outtakes have always been the tangents.
No, not the very end. That's the way end. That's after the end. What we've done is now we've, instead of leading with what we're testing, which is a super tangenty section of the show, we led with news, which is usually less tangenty. So I'm making up verbs left and right. Corey is over there laughing. Corey, your mic's up. You look like you have... Are you a regular listener of the podcast?
I'm actually not, I'm sorry to say.
Oh.
Mute him.
Your volume's down.
Oh.
No. What is the chat saying? Are they up in arms?
Coming out big in favor of tangents.
There you go. People love tangents.
But here's the thing. You gotta wonder what somebody who listens to this podcast for the first time thinks when they're listening to this.
I would not recommend that be the first podcast.
No.
Or maybe I would.
And refreshing.
But... if that's the first thing they listen to and they're coming in expecting a straight tech podcast and they don't know us from any asshole on the
street. If someone listens to the podcast and can't get past half an hour, then they don't deserve to listen to our podcast anyway.
People listen to podcasts to be informed and entertained.
I'm going
to
play the music.
And that balance is constantly in flux.
I'm going to play the music, which will transition us between the serious newsy part of the podcast and Tangent City USA, where we talk about what we're testing.
Wouldn't want to go off topic in Will's new fascist regime.
Let's listen to
I'm going to laser you.
Transition first.
That is not a technology-related subject!
Why do I have a German accent?
Because
I have the same heritage as you.
Because you're a fascist. I can give you an Italian accent.
I have the same heritage as you. That's totally placist.
But you're acting like a fascist.
No, I'm not.
You're now telling me when it's...
No.
You're affecting my right to free speech.
Did I stop your tangent during the bit when we were talking about the other thing?
You're saying that I'm only allowed to be tangential in your new, nice, neat, cordoned off tangent area.
Gary, I'm gonna have to redeem like the tangent coin every time I wanna go on a tangent.
Once we've done our homework, we can go to the fun zone.
You goobers can be as tangential as you want to be. This is like the fucking backseat in the car vacation.
We'll tell Dad, can we have fun? Have you done your homework? Have you brushed your teeth? Okay, well now you can talk about something that's not
this
technology.
This could be Will's childhood upbringing, his harsh upbringing coming
back. Oh yeah, we mustn't forget about his harsh backwards upbringing.
I'm shaking
locked down
my
in
head.
That root cellar for 18
I'm
hours a day.
I'm shaking my head.
We gotta drag the news Christmas trees into the house and sell them.
God damn it. Where's my stabbing knife?
So many flashbacks.
That just Will Photoshop thread is apparently already in
the no. No Nazi shit on the forums. That's the only rule. No, there's more rules than that, but I'll think of them as I see the pictures.
Hey, let's talk about Portal. Is that acceptable?
Well, hold on. We've talked about Playbook, which is what we're testing. That's the big thing.
I'm done with news.
I feel that this was a very content rich podcast.
We've been unusually content rich.
The signal to noise ratio
to the opposite
went
side
way back
of
the other way. Yes.
Without it, I would like more tangents than we've had so far. Just as a personal note.
Too many last week, not enough this week.
All I ask
it's
is for perfection,
a bit of a fucking
tightrope.
All I want
is perfection.
The mama bear porridge.
Yeah, fuck
maybe
yeah.
What you could do is fit us with like little
baby bear. Mama bear is too cold.
Maybe you could fit us with little electric shock things and just buzz us when you feel like we're being too tangential.
You should see what we're
going to
do in the live show tomorrow.
Enough.
Are you still wearing the heart rate sensor?
I forgot to charge it.
Oh, man.
That thing, it's uncomfortable. I don't like it. It's not going to get a good review. So, I am still wearing that thing. That's something to talk about later. Where the fuck does this hum come from? It's driving me slowly crazy.
It's
Gary. Is it the vent?
I think it's your mic. Man. Corey is picking up.
I've turned him all the way down, though.
So, I want to talk about Portal without spoiling anything.
Okay. I'm at chapter 4.
Here's the thing. We're going to talk about where we are. Okay, you're at chapter 4. I'm at chapter 4. We're taking it.
I'm enjoying. I'm savoring.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm seeing a lot of people saying they want to savor and ration the experience. Make it
if you listen to last week's podcast where we went on a
Portal buddy.
Tangent about Portal, I think all three of us talked about trying to get through the single player as fast as possible so we can get into the
co-op. You don't want to do that.
But and then I started playing the single player.
Look at it this way. The quicker you finish that game, the longer your wait's going to be for Portal 3.
Well, here's the thing, though. I do want to get into co-op this weekend.
Okay.
But what I've been told by people who are more expert than me is that I don't have to. You don't have to play one after the other.
Right. Right.
Oh well, then
but you don't want to go jump.
I was concerned about
either.
That because I haven't had a chance to play single player yet.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to jump into co-op if that spoiled the single player in some way. But if it doesn't matter which.
There's no spoilers, but the thing that like Tycho said on Penny Arcade the other day seems true, and that if once you're used to having four portals. It's challenging to go back to just having two portals.
I want to go through the single player, finish it, because I'm already in the middle of it. I don't want to stop
that
experience.
Are there eight chapters?
I think there are 10 chapters.
10 chapters.
And we're in chapter 4 right now, which is where it kind of starts ramping up.
It's getting good, without spoiling too much.
Spoilers!
Without spoiling anything,
We'll
say that Gary has not played Portal yet. Portal 2 at all.
No.
Shocking. You want to give your explanation for that?
I have two reasons. Number one, my computer is in the shop.
No. Your computer is not in the shop. Your monitor is in the shop.
Well, okay.
And your
your iMac's broken.
I have Portal 2 installed on my Mac and on my PC.
Yeah,
right.
But because my iMac is also the monitor
down
for my PC, and my iMac is currently on the disabled list.
So because and I think your iMac.
The truth comes out.
I could.
Your 27
I have a secondary monitor
iMac.
I could use, but I don't want to do that.
No, you want to play on the 2560x480.
Oh, that's horrible. I'm so sorry.
Your PC is really an accessory for your iMac.
It really
iMac.
Is.
Oh man, you can't see this at home, but Gary has a very sheepish look on his face right
why
now.
Why am I sheepish?
You just look sheepish.
Because for what purpose?
I don't know. Because you're using your iMac as your monitor, and the whole system broke down when that went to shit.
Problem. Yeah. That's the problem with an all-in-one and having two machines that both use the same.
You took it to the
so
Apple
what was
store?
The problem?
I took it to the Genius Bar, and they're currently repairing
Geniusing?
It. Yes.
Okay.
thinking real hard.
You know what happened was really annoying? The problem that I was having with it, and this happens every fucking time.
Okay.
I mean, not that my computer breaks down all the time, but like this is the sort of thing that happens, is as soon as I take it in, of course, I can't reproduce the problem.
Yeah, well, that's always the case.
Of course. Well, sometimes it's your power switches off on your... sometimes you didn't charge it.
Yeah, sometimes you just flip the light switch in the
sometimes,
room.
Yes, this was not a light switch issue or batteries in my
mouse.
Yeah,
well, you know, sometimes things happen to good people despite, you know...
They did discover, not related to the problem I was having, that when they ran the diagnostic tool, the fan was the only component that didn't pass the test. So they're replacing the fan.
Okay.
And then I'm going to get it back.
And then it's still going to have the same problem it had before.
Well, no, they're doing all the other they couldn't find what the other problem was.
Was it shutting off randomly?
No, it was just, it was this weird thing where it just wouldn't left click anymore. No matter what, I tried a bunch of different mice.
Oh, that's crazy weird.
Left click wouldn't respond, like right click would. Thing. When you moused over the dock, it wouldn't respond. There was no magnification or anything.
Mm. You only need to reinstall. That sounds like a software problem more than the hardware.
Yeah,
problem.
It was
back up though. You have used.
Yeah, I got a back up. I may have to reinstall.
Well, you know, if you get your monitor back and iOS isn't working or iOS 10 isn't working, you can still play Portal on your PC.
That's my plan.
That's your plan.
Yeah,
good.
I highly
if the problem could persist.
Hold on, wait. We're Portal buddies. Are you gonna have this back by this weekend?
I hope so.
You better.
It turns out
suddenly got very serious on.
Hold on. Well. Norm's portal buddy is at a wedding in Mexico this week.
Potentially,
who is your
might not come
buddy,
back. Brad. Brad is my portal buddy. I thought it'd be Dan Stapleton, but turns out he'd played it for the review.
I think Brad is a good
Brad. I love Brad, but he had to be out of town this week for a wedding. He's in Mexico. He might drink the water down there.
His
or
priorities are all wrong.
This level of commitment is not looking good on either of our portal buddies.
I
we
know.
Might have chosen portal.
I might have to be portal buddy with Will.
Well, I mean, my circumstances are out of my control.
I'm going to
give you a little tentative fist bump
right now. I'm just going to graze.
Just grazing.
If the worst comes to the worst, I can plug my 24-inch monitor into my PC.
I'm not going to ask you to do that.
What an awful experience.
I'm just going to abandon you and get a better portal buddy.
Just go find someone else.
I'm afraid Norm might yell at me, though. Portals, I'm really enjoying it. I didn't get to play last night.
It came out early, and I think everyone obviously knows that. It came out 9:30 p.m.
I sent some potatoes to Amazon to try to get the servers back up today.
And
that ARG seemed to leave a bad taste in a few people's mouths.
Well, anytime you do anything on that scale, it's going to leave a bad taste in somebody's mouth.
Yeah,
I had fun.
They made no real promises. The game did actually come out early. You got to play it. I mean, I'd rather it come out 9:30 p.m. PST than midnight. And people played, you know, got 3.5 hours of play. Some people beat it that night. We got to a point, you know, chapter 3 or 4, where it's like, oh man, just start thinking about the puzzles. It's a good time to take a break and pacing it. It's fine. I want to tell a story about what happened with Anna.
Okay.
So Anna's not on the podcast right now, obviously.
She's got the biggest commitment to a portal buddy of ours. She's actually flying someplace else to play co-op.
She's in L.A. today and tomorrow to do nothing but play Portal co-op with her friends down in L.A.
Wow.
Because she's the biggest Portal fan any of us have ever known. She did Portal fan art, everything when the first game came out.
She's like having like a LAN party?
I've never seen Anna swoon. Except when Portal. When we were at the Portal booth.
I knew she was into Team Fortress. I didn't know she was so into Portal.
No, she loves Portal more than anything else in the world.
Wow. Portal was the gateway drug for Team Fortress for her.
Okay. So here's the thing, though. Anna got through more of Portal, the single player, than we did in that first night, but still didn't beat the game. But was so afraid, and here's where we can possibly turn. The story turns dark turn. She was so afraid of being spoiled by the game. She got to a point, I think, in maybe the 7th or 8th chapter.
Right.
Where she thought she was nearing the end, but it wasn't the end.
By all reports, there's a
big moment or something.
Thing.
I don't know, but I don't know what the story is because I'm not that far yet. But she got to a puzzle where she couldn't solve it.
I think we have a question from the chat. It better not be spoilery, Corey.
It's not. Anna's actually in the chat.
I'm going to tell the story.
Oh, okay.
She got to a point where she was so afraid that she would be spoiled on Twitter or on the social networks because we all know Anna is a Web 2.0
Yeah, she's
person,
on the Get Glue channel
and
she can't
get out of the Twitter for too long, that she watched the rest of Portal instead of playing it so she could get the story and so she wouldn't be spoiled. She watched on YouTube the playthrough
that's horrible.
Of the rest of the game, the last hour, 2 hours, whatever it was, of the game.
I don't like to say people are bad people when they're not here to
defend
themselves.
And I asked, why would you do that? Isn't playing Portal part of the experience? No. The puzzles and the portaling, to her, not even secondary, tertiary.
She's into the story.
She's just into the writing and the story.
I can appreciate that.
I mean, you're a writer. I mean, that's a testament.
I mean,
to
I've
your
said
craft.
Before many times. I'm a content tourist in games now. I put the difficulty on easy because I'm not. I don't really care about the challenge anymore. I just want to see the content. I just want to enjoy the content, especially a game like a Valve game where you know there's a lot of great storytelling and, and artistry.
Yeah, well, and humor. Absolutely. I mean, it's a funny game.
But there's stuff not fun for me if I get stuck at a puzzle.
But like, if you walk into a portal room and you yourself notice, hey, that panel is open. What happens if I walk behind it?
Yeah.
And you see the art on the wall. There is that sense of discovery. Well, you found that someone didn't direct you there.
For me,
no, you're right. And I don't go to the YouTube clips and the guides until I get to a point where I'm like, I'm stuck. Like, I need help.
Oh, see, I never go to the guide.
That's inexcusable.
I never go to the guide.
What do you do when you absolutely hit a brick wall?
I go make a cup of coffee and come back.
Yeah, you take a break and then come back.
I hit a brick wall last night playing Mortal Kombat, trying to beat one of the bosses, and I was ready to fucking kick my foot through the TV screen and send the bill to Warner Brothers Games.
Okay.
Because
you think they'd pay or no?
I certainly would encourage them to.
I don't think they're going to give you a
look
check
at my,
for that.
Give my case a fair hearing.
Maybe.
I went online.
You have contacts there.
I got a couple of pointers online.
Okay.
And I was able to defeat the boss.
So,
and I didn't feel any less satisfied. See, you know, we all need, sometimes we need a little help.
But that's a game where the knowledge isn't there's knowledge plus application.
Execution. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. With Portal, the knowledge, like the execution, especially in this new one, since they kind of consoled it up a little bit,
right,
there's not a whole lot of like difficulty in executing stuff once you figure out what the trick is.
Yeah. Right.
So,
and I would argue,
the thing I'm doing
as great as the story is, I would argue the gameplay and the experience of playing
the mechanic is brilliant.
It's so integral to the story. Split the two.
For me, the mechanic is the reason I'm there.
So have you never encountered a problem in a puzzle game or a platform or something where you hit a brick wall and you just cannot figure it out? And
it depends on how much I care about the game. So, for example, playing like Pokemon or something, I have the iPad with the game facts open and I just scroll along as I go. Because I don't give a shit why trainer A doesn't like trainer C and why I have to fight these people. I just want to collect some monsters.
Yeah, right. But in a game like Portal, where you do care, what are you going to do, theoretically, if you get into another situation where you hit a brick wall and you can't solve
a puzzle? I'm not going to get into a brick wall. I never.
Valve developed their game well enough that they train you to learn the puzzles and solve it based on
the trick
what
is
you
to
learn.
Come at it sideways. There's always a way to come at it sideways. Yeah. Never accept defeat. Maybe Norm and I are better Portal buddies than we thought we were. You and your game.
I can't accept that someone who says that they are such a big fan, the biggest fan of Portal, would resort to watching the game as opposed to playing it.
Certainly with a game like Portal, one of the most fun elements, one of the most satisfying elements is that feeling.
Yeah, it's like
when the light bulb goes
and then
on,
you let it
and
go.
You go, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
That's great.
Oh, we got a question from the chat.
Oh, I've got actually Anna in the chat.
Anna
in the chat, and she is defending her decision because she just absolutely had to know how it ended.
I'm just turning the volume down.
You absolutely had to know.
I'm just, you're
so
down, you're
you
off.
You can give me $60 and I will show you a video of the Portal playthrough.
We're lingering on this too much.
That's an extreme case.
This tangent has gone too far.
I am Team Anna on this one. I understand where she's coming from.
Well, that's because you're a writer. You think the story is the most important part.
I think the story is an incredibly
important part, but I think the experience is diminished when you just
The thing about this game, from what I've seen so far, is that it's one of the few times where the story and mechanic are both equally important.
Yeah.
In GTA games, clearly, like, story is precedent over mechanics because the mechanics are kind of shitty a lot of the times. In this game, the mechanic is brilliant. The story's really, really good so far. I mean, I think that's you can't have one without that. I think you're right, Norm. Other stuff we're testing, I did some coffee videos this week.
Yep.
I have the Cone, which is the Coava brewer, roaster and coffee house up in Portland. They make a stainless steel filter for the Chemex, which you have, Gary.
Mm.
And it has tons of little holes, so you don't have to use paper filters.
Oh,
you don't
reusable.
Have to throw stuff in the landfill. I tested it out. It's okay.
Well, surely those filters are compostable.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part. Unless you get the bleach ones, they go away pretty fast, is my understanding. But I haven't talked to it. That's something I should talk to somebody about, because I'm kind of curious what the downside of those is.
But stainless, you're not dealing with like soggy filters or anything gross.
But the irony is it's harder to clean than the paper. Because with the paper, you just grab the edges and kind of pinch it up and then run over to the trash can and drop
just
it
toss
in.
Toss it in the garbage, yeah.
Yeah, but with this, it's a boiling hot piece of metal.
Yes.
Because it conducts heat really well.
Right.
So you can't just lift it out. And it's also kind of sharp and pointy in places.
Yeah, it's a disc.
So, like, you it was, and then you have to knock the, you can't just throw the whole thing in the trash because it costs $50.
Yeah. Yeah.
So point you have to kind of knock it out and then rinse it out, and then there's always ground stuck in the bottom.
Yeah.
Not a huge fan of the cone.
Okay. Mm.
But I also tested the Coava. They made a similar thing for the AeroPress, which is just a metal disc with the same size holes. That thing is badass. Mm. It has the same problems with being sharp and hard to clean, but it makes a really nice cup of coffee.
All right.
I'm strongly pro.
And haven't you also been experimenting with some kind of cold fusion brew technique?
Yeah, so yesterday I got the Hario. Cold fusion for a minute? The Saint? And,
the Saint. That's
didn't
it.
Val
that's
Kilmer quit doing Batman because of that?
He thought that was going to be the next big franchise.
Yeah. Well, it was better than Batman and Robin.
Yes, absolutely
that
true.
Is true.
And you know what? The Saint is a perfect guilty pleasure.
I'm going to go ahead and say I think that sitting out here in this big room where everybody can listen to us makes me self-conscious enough that the tangents can't get that out of control.
Oh, my goodness.
It's
that's
self-regulating.
Bad. It's bad.
Right. I'm uncomfortable. I feel like everybody's watching.
You're okay broadcasting it to thousands of podcast listeners, but you don't want your closest colleagues hearing it?
They don't listen to the podcast.
They don't listen to the podcast, yeah. So anyway, the Hario cold brew method. I got it from Ritual, coffee house in town, my favorite local coffee
roaster. Yeah, they make good coffee.
They make badass coffee, dude. And they did they're selling the Hario stuff, which is Japanese. And the problem with the Hario stuff is it comes with no English instructions usually. So, like when you get the V60, which is the pour over thing, or the kettle that looks like a honey, a beehive, neither of those have English instructions. Pretty easy to figure out. With the cold brewer, you have to get the ratio of coffee to water right. It's a little trickier. I was really pleasantly surprised to see that there were English instructions on a little Ritual postcard in there. A++ on that, guys. I had the first sip of that this morning, and it was luscious. All velvety and smooth and coated your tongue nicely. Really, really good. I'm looking forward to some iced coffees this summer, courtesy of that thing.
Cold coffee?
I'm sure you can heat it up, but I'm using it to make cold coffee. There's benefits to doing cold brew. I think it increases caffeine content a little bit, or maybe it decreases. It does something with caffeine content, whether it goes up or down, but it also is a little less acidic. So if you have, like, acid stomach problems or whatever, then the cold brew, it might be something you
I do
try.
Enjoy a nice iced coffee.
Oh, yeah. Especially in the summertime. Like, my goal this summer is to drink iced coffee instead of Cokes and
the only problem
like
I find is that if you, obviously if you have ice in it,
yeah.
more Nuts. So than most other iced drinks, the last quarter
is all
it really suffers for the melting ice.
I like to put a little cream. Get it a
Why
little
can't
milky.
We have a fancy glass where the ice is separated from the content, but still
That's something
it.
You should invent.
Yeah, you should get on that.
Cut this part out.
Channing it up. It's too late. It's live. Somebody out there has got a Kickstarter going already.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm
visioning right now.
Yeah.
It's like a frosted mug, but you plug it in and it chills. It has like a separate...
I think it's just a thing with a pole and there's a piece of ice that goes up in the middle and you freeze it solid.
Pretty
I don't know.
It's like my awesome
invented.
Ice cream trick.
Yeah.
The only way to eat cereal. I think talk about this before
the ice cream is the cereal. You really eat cereal with ice cream every day?
Not. I don't eat cereal every day.
You would weigh 400
when
pounds.
I eat cereal.
Okay.
I always have vanilla ice cream and I coat the edge of the bowl.
That's pretty gross, dude.
With vanilla ice cream. A thin layer of vanilla ice cream, just spread around with a spoon, put the cereal in, and only frosted flakes, or not frosted flakes, corn flakes work the best. Pour the milk in. The ice cream is cold enough that it keeps the milk cold and the cereal cold. But then it also melts slowly, and the vanilla flavor is a perfect match for corn flakes and milk.
I can see that, but you're like multiplying calories by about a million.
You're eating cereal. It's sugar. And,
cornflakes isn't really sugar. It's just corn.
Well, most people eat
Frosted Flakes.
That's a Norman Chan original.
People don't realize just how calorifically crazy cereal is. You look at the thing and go, 200 calories, not too bad. Look at the serving size. That's for like that much.
In one of those little square boxes.
By the time I filled my bowl with granola, I've had like 4
Well, that's like 3
calories.
Days worth of food.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You could go ahead and cut down some trees with that.
Granola is fucking bad news.
Yeah. I like granola.
Yogurt and granola?
You assume it's going to be
the
healthy.
The best breakfast in the world?
It's crazy.
But yogurt and granola, you control the granola amount so you get the portion right, so you don't get too many calories.
You want the crunch. Yogurt,
but
you got to have the crunch.
Yeah, the crunch is the best part. Except Greek yogurt.
Video capture stuff? I love Greek yogurt.
I love Greek yogurt too, but I don't really have Greek yogurt and granola.
Yeah.
Greek yogurt
that's
by
what
itself.
Yeah, have you ever gotten the Greek yogurt thing with the honey? Where you put the spoon in the honey and then you have the spoonful of the Greek yogurt?
No, the Greek yogurt I get has the syrup on the bottom.
Corey knows what I'm talking about.
Mix that up.
Have you ever cut a cantaloupe in half, fill the hole in the middle with Greek yogurt?
Crazy. I've done that with cottage cheese, but I never done it with Greek yogurt.
It's amazing.
I know what I'm doing tonight.
Somebody I know was telling me the other day that what they like to do is they create their own proprietary cereal by mixing together several of their favorite cereals in a blend that they've figured out, like 25% Fruit Loops, 25% Raisin Bran, whatever.
Where can I get this recipe?
Well, I don't know, but the point is that you would create your own.
Yeah,
it's a bespoke cereal.
Did we ever talk about the Fruity Pebbles treats? I made some of those
We talked about Fruity Pebbles because Pebbles were not meant to be fruity.
Did we talk about it after I made
Cocoa
it though?
Pebbles.
The Fruity Pebbles treats. The Fruity Pebbles treats, surprisingly good, although crazy, crazy sweet. Like, uncomfortably sweet. Norm's tongue is out really far.
If you were washed up on a desert island with a cow, because I guess you would need that.
A refrigerator.
And an infinite supply of cereal.
Yeah.
Like, it was a cereal tanker that went down.
Yes.
That you were traveling on.
I know my answer.
But it's all one cereal.
Yes.
Am I trying to, like, get nutrition, or am I just going for what I wanted to eat?
You're going to die there anyway. Might as well die happy.
Yeah.
Honey Bunches of Oats chocolate variant.
I would go with the full size, the big, what they now call the Big Bite in the retcon of the cereal world, the Big Bite Frosted Mini Wheats.
Oh, because they have even teeny tiny ones.
The ones you get now are teeny tiny.
Have we not talked about this before?
Shredded wheat originally, you can still get it, is pretty it's big. It's like the size of an iPhone, each biscuit.
Hold on, really? Have we not talked about this?
I don't think we've talked about this on the
podcast.
I didn't like it when they brought in the teeny tiny ones.
I don't like any of the sub full size Frosted Mini Wheats.
You need
bite size sucks, teeny tiny ones
suck. But you understand the irony of what you just said. You don't like any of the smaller mini
wheats. I understand.
Wheats.
Well, there's no full size Frosted Wheat.
Well, no, but. There is a full-size shredded wheat, but that's a derivative of that.
That's something horses should eat. That is a terrible cereal.
You don't like classic shredded wheat?
The only way I'll eat that is if you heat up the milk and put some brown sugar on top.
Okay.
And then it all kind of breaks down and turns into just
frosted wheats.
Oaty, weedy mess.
So not frosted mini wheats, but frosted wheats.
No, frosted mini wheats. There's no such thing as frosted wheats.
You want frosted mini wheats, but the original size.
But not the ones that are two inches long and an inch wide.
One spoon is one wheat.
One spoon you cut in half, and that one wheat is two spoons.
What?
Yes, full size.
You know what I tried recently?
Uh-oh. Frosted mini wheats.
See, Sarah says I'm right.
What? Yeah, you're not mic'd. You realize? Go over and talk into Corey's mic.
If you use a baked spoon,
yeah.
Then it's a full.
One spoon is one wheat.
It's this long. It's too much.
Come on, I'm little. I can handle it.
I like to have decent sized mouths.
So Will,
Sarah from Comic Vine, ladies and gentlemen.
Island scenario, you would be
full
breaking
size.
Wheat. Oh, no, no.
Well, because it's all about the ratio of sugar to wheat.
Even smaller size.
The smaller size
mini.
Is terrible.
The reason they do it is to increase the sugar content to wheat ratio.
Yeah. You want the wheat. The wheat
is trick
good.
The kids into eating because you sugar it up real high.
Because the wheat soaks in the milk real well.
Yeah,
you're right.
It gets the right amount of soggy. Yeah. The sugar a little bit dissolves mm-hmm. into the milk. It ends up being delicious. Yep. But because they had a cereal cleansing against the full size Frosted Mini Wheat, you can't fucking get them anywhere anymore. There's one grocery store that I know of that sells them, but they have 45 different flavors of bite sized Frosted Mini Wheats, all of which are terrible: strawberry, vanilla, almond crunch, chocolate.
I tried a new variation recently that I actually thought was quite good.
You're part of the problem.
It has little bits of fruit in the middle.
No. You're doing it wrong.
Fruit in cereal that comes prepackaged in the cereal is never
Hold
good.
On. Except for the Special K.
With the
dehydrated strawberries.
No, those are terrible.
Those are the best.
Those are exactly what I'm talking about.
Those
if
are fantastic. You're so
your
wrong.
Cereal, you cut them yourself.
You're wrong, sir.
Let me tell you what banana in your cereal. Oh, dehydrated.
What's your desert cereal?
I don't know if this would be my desert island cereal, but I think the best cereal I've ever had.
You say there's not enough tangents on this podcast.
I was going to say, we're in a pretty big tangent right now. Trader Joe's Toffee Almond Clusters.
Toffee.
You shouldn't get cereal at hippie grocery stores like Trader Joe's and Whole Foods.
I'm going to go.
My
desert island cereal, I think, would have to be. I may go with the Frosted Mini Wheats, or I may go with Honey Nut Cheerios.
I like Honey Nut Cheerios. They get soggy and kind of gross.
I don't like Honey Nut Cheerios.
Not if you wolf them down.
You've got to eat them real fast. They need a non-nutritive crunch enhancer.
Corn flakes over
Clark Griswold.
That's exactly what Clark Griswold does. Yeah. Mm. We tested some video capture stuff this week. That's on the site. Hold on. No, that's not. We're saving that.
That's on the site.
The Hop Hog one is up.
Hop Hog is on the site.
Hop Hog.
It's Klingon word. Hapok.
Hapok.
What is?
Hapok.
No, Hapog is a company. They make video capture stuff.
Oh. Yeah. So actually, a bunch of people actually own this. It's nothing new.
Yeah.
You can plug your console or anything with component out.
People ask us a lot.
You can plug it, use that as a pass-through, and plug it into your PC with USB and capture video at 480.
People say, hey, Will, hey, Norm, please tell us how we can make giant bomb-style quick looks at home. Yeah. And this is a device that will enable that kind of functionality when paired with a mixer and some microphones.
Well, Drew and I were talking about how, like, in the old days, way old school days, we would use, like, our camcorders, digital camcorders,
yeah.
like a Canon one, with a mini DV tape in there, and they had an S-video in. And so, like, video cards back then, and actually both Drew and I used Jedi Knight was, like, the first game, Jedi 2.
I did that with a Matrox Marble card.
Plug S-video out from the GeForce card, plug it direct into the Canon camcorder, and record your game footage on mini DV, and import it back in with FireWire. And then I edit from there.
You kids don't know you're born. I remember when I first started in game magazines in 1988.
I'm so
We had to go into a dark room and set up a 35mm film camera.
We had to build a tent of garbage bags
around the screen.
Right.
And you had to set the camera up to super fast exposure because, God forbid, the games had a pause mode back then. Those were the days.
I lived in a cardboard box on the side of the road.
I wore an onion on my belt, which was the style at the time.
Yes, too many states, so many memes. Video capture stuff. There's more of that coming. We tested that the Roxio cheapo one. The game capture.
That'll be up next week.
That'll be up next week. We also tested the beer tender, which we talked about last week a little bit, didn't we?
Yeah, it went up on the website yesterday. And actually,
back when we still had a website
after hours last night because we're out of beer in our bar. So I went to our Krupp's beer tender and.
You guys went to a show last night, didn't you?
No.
Oh, did you not go?
Ryan and Alex went to a show, and Dave Roy and I went to the Richmond.
Oh, nice. Okay.
But yeah, the beer tender works. You got to buy these mini kegs, which are not necessarily cost efficient, but it works, and you can have like a tap, like a cheap tap in your house.
I think that device, as it is only good for three types of beer in the U.S. is roughly equivalent to the Margaritaville.
I would agree. Yeah.
I think that is the kind of thing that people got on payment plans and were responsible for destroying the world economy.
It's a Father's Day gift. It's a novelty item.
But it's $100.
We need to find an icy maker.
Get him a tie.
I want an icy maker.
Norm needs more ties. Do you have any kids, Norm?
Not that I know of.
Okay, just checking. I think that's it for what we've been testing. Have I forgotten anything?
Testing the reader's patience.
I think it's time for questions. We have three audio questions this week, of which I have loaded three. Let us play the first one, which I need to make the volume very loud on. Ooh, that's hummy.
Hey there, Tested Crew. This is Chris, username Toxity on Whiskey Medium.
Oh, wait. I forgot to play the music.
Gotta have the music. It's so loud.
We're mixing this live, folks.
I'm prepared to hear a question.
Okay, now it's time for questions.
To ignore your questions and talk about your hometown.
If you have questions, you can email us at podcast.tested.com, @tested.com. Keep it short, under a minute. Hometown trivia we like. If you use your phone to record it, not your BlackBerry Playbook because there's no audio recording app, but if you use your phone, plug in a headset, use the headset mic, and if you want to be real nice, run it through Levelator so it doesn't sound really super soft like this question. Here is the first question.
Hey there, Tested Crew. This is Chris, username Toxity on Whiskey Media.
Hi, Chris.
I live in my hometown of Cooper, which is in the Kingdom of Fife in the awesome country of Scotland. My town thing is that, according to the last census, we have a population of around 9,000.
Wow.
My question is on capturing video game footage with equipment such as the Roxio game capture device. Are devices like this good for capturing footage, or is having a capture card in the PC better? For a student's price range, what is the best option? Thanks a lot, guys, and keep being awesome.
Okay, so the Roxio GameCap capture we looked at, we tested it out, shot the video already, I've used it. It's pretty good, especially if you just want to stream to Justin TV and stuff like that.
At SD resolution.
Right, that's the thing, is it'll capture... It will pass through a 1080p signal, a 1080i signal, or a 720p signal.
Yep.
It only captures 480p.
Yeah.
So you're not going to get high def if you want to capture and post it to YouTube, 720p or something like that. That's not going to work. However, it's $69 in the U.S., which is pretty much a smoking deal.
It's a small box. I mean, you're not going to get digital audio. It's just the RCA. Having dedicated capture card, the Roxio.
There's
the
Blackmagic Intensity Pro and those types of things.
The hardware encoding is fine on this product. And the quality of the video is more,
okay.
more than, I mean, it's good enough for YouTube.
The one thing I will say is if you pay about $100 more, you get a significantly more capable product.
We're still looking to get an HDMI one in because that's, I think,
right.
I
emailed those dudes again. So we'll see if that happens. Let's ask the next question. Did we answer all of that person's questions?
I think we did. And we also didn't talk about his town. Hey.
9,000 people.
9,000 people in
I
this town.
I thought he was in a small town.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hello, Tested. Drink Bourbon here again.
Hi, Drink Bourbon.
Hometown trivia. I'm from West Dundee, Illinois. I already gave you the only fun fact I know about West Dundee. So our sister city, East Dundee, Illinois, was just voted by Good Morning America to have the best block in the country.
Wow.
I don't really know what that means, but apparently they like Main Street.
Block of what?
Anyway, my wife and I are thinking about venturing into the smartphone market. We're with U.S. Cellular. Don't plan on changing that. Really like them, but they're, you know, since we've never had smartphones, kind of don't know a whole lot about them, and I don't recognize most of the ones that they have available. So real quick, the Windows Phone 7 phone they have is the HTC Touch Pro 2. Android phones, they have the Samsung Mesmerize, Acclaim, and Gem. And Samsung scares me based on the things I've heard you guys say. LG Optimus U and Apex, and the HTC Desire. So are any or all of those phones just not worth the time and money and effort that it takes to have them, or are any of them actually kind of good? So yeah, any recommendations off of those or just to stay away would be appreciated. Thanks, guys.
I've never even heard of U.S. Cellular.
U.S. Cellular is a smaller network on the East Coast. We had U.S. Cellular where I grew up in the hinterlands, as you put it.
So those phone brands and the phone models are some of them are the like the very limited versions. So you're not going to have access to like the App Store,
right?
The app market. I don't know them specifically, and I think the HTC Desire is very safe. If
that's the only one that I have heard of.
Yeah, if you're not going to do big things, if you're not looking for, you know, the Galaxy S2 or something that's on the cutting edge, which it looks like your carrier doesn't support anyway.
I think the better idea for this kind of question is to post it in the forum where you can get a kind
a lot
of people who have the phones to tell you how they feel about them. I know the Desire was a good phone in the time. It's kind of old now.
It is old.
Post it in the forums. That was way too many models for me to keep track of, unfortunately. I apologize. Corey, do we have any questions from the chat?
Yeah. How much do you think Apple will change in the iPhone 5? Just CPU and camera or even more?
We
talked about it a few weeks ago.
I think more.
It depends on whether it's a September or July. I mean, I know the rumors say September. I'm still banking. Still betting on July.
Reuters said September.
I still think it'll be an incremental update. I don't think it's going to be a big deal.
I'm gonna
dual-core CPU.
Declarations. I'm not buying iPad 2 this year. Not buying next iPhone this year. Getting a new MacBook Air.
Hmm. Okay.
Wait, when the hell is that coming out?
Well, the initial rumors were July for that, and I think that's more likely because Apple needs to get Sandy Bridge.
You want that Sandy Bridge,
I want that Sandy Bridge.
Yeah. We have one more question, then we'll take a couple of questions from the chat, so if you want to queue some up, Corey, then we'll...
Hey, Will, Gary, Norm. This is Ben from Vienna, and for hometown trivia, in 2005, CNN ranked Vienna fourth on its list of the 100 best places to live in the U.S. As for my question, it's not really tech-related, but it's more... related to your origin stories, I guess. I'm going to be a college freshman at Virginia Tech next year, and I really don't want to live in Virginia once I graduate from college. So I was wondering how you guys ended up moving away from home and when you guys did that, especially because I know that Will and Gary didn't live in California and moved there for whatever reason. Thanks, guys. I love the podcast.
Dude, Vienna is where my grandparents live in Oakton, which is in Northern Virginia. So it's right up by D.C. It's a lovely little town. I used to get ice cream at the Giffords Ice Cream in Vienna, Virginia, when I was a wee lad and visiting my grandparents at Christmas at summer times.
How did you move out here, Will Smith?
Let's not open this can of worms. Do you want to lay down on the couch?
No, I'm good. Only if I can lay in somebody's lap.
That's not going to happen.
More cans of worms.
I
have the lamb stop screaming, Will?
It puts the lotion on its skin. I took a job. I started writing for Ars Technica when I was working an IT job out of college.
Well, let me ask you this. Is it something you wanted? Were you one of these like kids going, I got to get out of this small town and make it in the big city?
I don't want to be selling Christmas trees anymore.
No, I mean, I like the small town I grew up in. I don't think I'd want to live there now just because of, like, I like having access to
Also,
nice
you don't like small towns
stuff
anymore.
Like that. No, I like small towns.
Oh, just not fake small towns.
I don't like Garrison Keillor because he's fake. Yeah, that's the problem.
So ridiculous.
This has turned into an in-group, out-group thing with three people on the podcast. We need to, where's Andy? I took a job out of college because I thought I was going to go to med school, then changed my mind. Took a job working IT because I'd done computer stuff all through college to pay for college. Did that for a year, and it was horrible. I mean, I was working like 18 hours a day. I was the only one responsible for like 1,000 computers. I was constantly pissed off, and I was on my way to an early grave. And I also started writing for Ars Technica at the same time. So I was working nights and weekends and holidays and writing about B and Linux and video cards and games for Ars Technica. When Ars Technica was tiny, I mean, Ars Technica launched in, I think, June of 1998, and I started writing, June of 1998, and I started writing in January of 99. And so we went to Comdex. We had a relationship with MaxPC because they sold ads for us. And as a result of that, I met the dudes at Maximum PC, started doing a little bit of freelance here and there to kind of help supplement the bills. Eventually got to a point where I was so pissed off about the IT job that I just quit. Like, it was actually super satisfying. I walked into the boss's office one day and was like, did a take this job and shove it and hit the door and like cleaned out my desk and didn't ever go back. Just, I have to say, it's not a responsible thing to do. I kind of regret doing it as a grown-up now because it is...
Best breakup ever.
A powerfully uncool thing, but it is still a very high satisfying point in my life to know that at some point in my life I had the balls to just walk in and be like, I don't know how I'm going to pay my mortgage next month, but fuck you guys, I'm out. You're assholes. And then the Ars thing led to Maximum PC. They needed, when they launched, when you were working on Total Film, they launched T3 and some of their folks left to go work on that. I came in to fill one of those slots and worked there for 10 years. That's how I ended up in California.
Were you excited about the idea of coming to California and living in a big city, or was that just kind of part of
what came with it? Well, I lived in D.C. for a little bit. I mean, just between college and high school, doing internships and stuff like that. Not unsupported, right? But I was excited about coming out here, but I was a little nervous. I wasn't sure if we were going to like it. Gina moved with me, so, you know, we weren't married at the time. It was kind of controversial. And, I mean, we were, like, literally, we had a conversation where we were like, we're going to move out here. We're going to try it for a year and see how it goes. And in June of next year, we're going to reconvene and see what we want to do. And in June of the next year, we're like, you know, it's okay. Let's try another year. And at the end of the second year, we never talked about it again.
I don't know why, but I just increasingly have this image of Will's childhood as, like, the opening 20 minutes of Hannah.
No, it was more like Oliver Twist.
You're
Jerry.
Dead. I've right? killed you.
I've got to go see that.
I missed your heart.
Spoilers. Spoilers.
It's the opening of the movie.
I had a lovely childhood. It was
also because of Will's hair and like the
do
eyes.
Do I have crazy hair right now? Right?
You do kind of look like hair, right? You could be in a log cabin writing manifestos.
Give me some time. I'll let the beard grow out.
He moves to the big town, right?
Yep. Norm, what's your origin story?
I have a court order. I can't leave the state, so I'm stuck in California.
Okay. Gary, origin story?
I was born in a big city, so no, there wasn't anywhere for me to go.
Birmingham.
I actually moved. Well, Birmingham is a bit. It's the second biggest city in England.
Well, you worked in New York for a while, right?
No.
Did you ever work in the office in New York?
I was born and raised in London. Okay. I actually moved to a small town because I got sick of big city living.
Okay.
And I went and worked in Bath.
Oh, Bath.
Beautiful,
I'm sorry, Bath.
Beautiful
that's,
Roman.
That's what I meant.
Well, yeah. You know,
Roman everything's city. Everything's more than 1,000 years old in Bath. Yeah.
Yes. Lived there for a few years because that's where Future, where employed all you guys as well. That's where they were originally based. And then I came out here.
Okay.
I always wanted to live in America. I always liked to. They used to send me to San Francisco all the time for visiting developers, like come over and, you know, visit Lucas.
You were the travel guy.
Well, no, I mean, everyone was at to some degree. And I just really liked San Francisco. So. When I had a chance to come out here and work on the US version of PC Gamer.
The superior version.
It was only supposed to be, well, when I was there, certainly.
Yeah.
It was only supposed to be a year, but I, you know, 1 year turned into the into
immigrants.
A second, and the next thing you know, I've been here
immigrants.
For, been here for
15 years
now, yeah.
Corey, any more questions from the chat before we wrap this up and do some outtakes?
Add one. Oh, the
this life sucks. I gotta use a
battery life on the playbook.
So, like I said, I had about this at 80% earlier in the day, and I've had it at max brightness. I actually had to turn it down. I'm in the yellow right now.
Max brightness.
Gary, you can see it's about like 10% right now.
Yeah, and you're
but
streaming
also,
web
streaming,
video, which is pretty heavy.
You stream.
Has it been going this whole time?
The whole time.
Yo, dog, I heard you liked internet. I'm not going to do that. Okay, so I guess any more questions? We'll do a full rundown of the playbook later. I don't know if we'll stream it, but we'll do a rundown.
Thoughts on the rumored R700 Radeon 4000 series GPU?
I think that, those were very interesting rumors. Norm?
I don't think we're going to see them for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, the new GPUs from ATI just came out a month ago, 3 months ago, right? 4 months
ago. New GPUs came out late last year, but Northern Islands is going to be their platform for a while.
It's an 18-month cycle, usually.
I don't always get, like, where, like, I want to understand where that question is coming from. Like, how hungry can you be for technology? The current latest generation of cars, which are already
overpowered. Man, if you have 3 30-inch monitors.
I want more power.
I want more power.
3 30-inch monitors. You've got to have real video cards to drive that, man.
You know, I'm not waiting for I'm playing Crysis 2 until I get DX11 patch.
Oh, my God. The thing is, I'm with you on this one, Gary. I look at that, and I'm like, everything I'm playing at native resolution on my panel.
It's not just
with no sagging.
It's also these cards are extremely power hungry.
Yes.
So you're waiting for the next, you know, transistor switchover. So
yeah, of course.
Small next process. Right. And so they'll be more power efficient.
So you're looking for the newer card so there's less power.
Use less power while delivering the same performance.
More power, more efficient.
More power, more power.
More performance, less power.
Okay. So that does it for questions. If you have questions, podcast tested. What is it? Podcastattested.com.
You almost did the doctor thing.
I know. It's such an old habit. I did 150 episodes of that. Anyway, yeah, here we go. I'm going to play some music, and then we're going to wrap up the show.
That's not how we end the show.
I play the music, and then I wrap up the show. I say thanks to Gary, Norm, Andy on the couch, Corey manning the very unusual having live chat during this. It's weird. Vinny and Drew for setting up the cameras, which most of you probably won't have ever seen. And everybody who commented pro or con, sorry, Forte, in the podcast thread about last week's epic tangential McGriddle Fest. We'll be back next week with another episode of This Is Only a Test. Stay tuned for fake outtakes. I'm Will Smith. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Gary, Norm, Corey, Andy, whoever else I should have remembered. Which song should I play today?
I can do it live.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
Test it.
I love planets. I love being on one.
Test it. That's my favorite one.
Somehow I knew it was going to be that one.
I almost feel like Pebbles Should Not Be Fruity could be one of those.
That's true.
Yeah, I guess. No, it needs to be a little more organic.
Anna makes those. That's an Anna song. Yeah. That's an Anna. Anna Herker Robles original. Yeah, so I think she usually pulls them when Norm is screaming stuff in Apps of the Week.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, sometimes it's just random quick looks. And
she makes good choices.
Corey, does the chat have any requests for fake outtakes conversations? I have a couple of things.
No, let's not take requests. It's just
you don't want to take requests?
The flow organically.
No, we've entered the free speech zone, Norm. Oh. Now we can talk about whatever we want.
Oh. Fuck you,
you know, I went to Berkeley. I understand this. Yeah.
That's at the San Francisco airport, too. Oh. I always wanted to go to the free speech zone at San Francisco airport and talk and have signs that talk about the TSA's fascist screening procedures.
You know, that you see that feeling, that lightness you get from feeling like you can say whatever
the
you want
shackles.
Without fear of being persecuted?
You guys are both bastards.
That's what freedom feels like. It's an amazing feeling.
Now I understand why you came to America.
Absolutely.
You had the Magna Carta. That's good enough.
We did. We invented democracy.
The cradle.
Okay, free speech zone. What are we talking about? I'm off the controls. This is driving.
With freedom comes responsibility. Right. You got to use this. You got to come up with something.
The price of freedom is eternal
vigilance.
This topic
actually that we talked about very briefly earlier this week, not recorded. But again, one of the things that had always come up when you were running Maximum PC was top 10 lists.
Oh, so, you want to bring the John Phillips conversation into this?
I want to bring up.
This is like a 3-year-old argument. I don't know if I'm comfortable having this.
Last week we talked about your Orange Box review, which is also a 3-year-old argument.
Oh, yeah. And Will got nailed to the wall on that.
Everybody agreed with me.
There were multiple
people.
Do you have like special Will forums?
There were multiple people that said you guys should not be allowed to review games anymore.
I think Will's got
too bad.
Neither of you review games
Will's
anymore.
Got some kind of Chrome plugin, like only the positive,
positive
comments.
That's what
get
Watson is
to
doing right now.
Only shit I want to see
for pro Will comments.
Oh yeah.
So
you have these Stalinist forums where all anti-Will sentiment has been erased.
Once upon a time.
No. And it's not just a you and John Phillips thing. This is
a magazine craft.
This is a total legitimate editorial decision.
Information theory, kind of.
Yeah, kind of. And all about, you know, how the process, cognitive process of reading
articles.
So when you present a list,
yes,
a top 10 list or a top 100 list or top 250,
as many publications do on the internet,
it's an easy, lazy way to make a good feature.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. You know, the Rolling Stones top 100 albums of all time, or Entertainment Weekly's top 10 entertainers.
Or PC Gamer's 100 best PC games of all time.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
The argument isn't that whether or not to do the story. The story can be good. The argument is, how do you present the story? Do you start from 100 and go to 1?
And add some dramatic tension.
Or do you start at 1 and then go through the rest?
There should be a countdown towards 1.
Well, that's the old school magazine way to do it. But Entertainment Weekly, about 3 years ago, started doing it the other way. Which I found revolutionary.
Yes, because what you want, of course, is an article that becomes progressively less interesting as it goes on.
Let's give the Entertainment Weekly example, because they are the most prominent example of publication
of the backwards list.
When they say the top 10 entertainers of 2010, they start off, who's on the cover? It's Johnny Depp on the cover. They've given it away.
Right.
And then he is the first person they talk about because they have the longest interview.
Was this when we were doing the 100 greatest technologies of all time?
Yes.
That ended up with USB being
number
one.
Or the top 100 news stories of whatever
the year
was.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Do you start off with the bang and have the longest piece about that at the beginning?
And then have a relatively short list where you pull out the interesting stuff and do big profiles on the interesting ones?
Or do you do the short stuff first? And then eventually build up, and then you have the, you know, 5 items.
Well, we've solved this problem at Tested by just not doing lists.
Sure.
But.
So, Will is in the camp, the Entertainment Weekly camp.
Well, no, I'm in the liking to try new things and see how it goes camp.
Okay.
But in this case, that put me in the Entertainment Weekly camp.
That put you in the Entertainment Weekly camp.
Yes.
Generally, though, that these things are the way they are as a result of many years of editors and journalists trying new things and eventually over time discovering that this
because
is the best
way. Because that's the way we always did it is
do
always
not
a bad
challenge
answer.
Conventional wisdom. I thought that's a philosophy you'd enjoy.
No, I like challenging conventional wisdom.
Oh, okay.
That's why I had to break down the tangents in this podcast.
Okay.
Conventional wisdom said, yeah, tangents are fine. I think that new users don't like tangents.
What? Conventional wisdom says tangents are not fine.
Despite the overwhelming popularity.
It depends on what you decide is convention. I think the convention is all the people posting the comments. They want more tangents.
So,
anyway.
I think there was a lot of heated debate and discussion over this.
It became kind of a point about yelling.
Well, let me ask you this. It happens very often where the sides got so entrenched in their positions that it wasn't even about.
It was like the French and the English in the Hundred Years War.
It wasn't even about what was the best for the story. It was about being in the right.
I'll argue against my own thinking here for a moment. I'll play devil's advocate because, you know, again, as a magazine editor, whenever I did those lists, I would have to go back and look, but certainly my thinking now is that you should always start at 100 and go, well, it's getting bigger and the excitement is mounting. What's going to be the best game?
But then you lead with three boring pages.
When VH1 does its 100 greatest things,
because
they want you to watch to the end of the show.
Right.
But with a magazine, what's interesting is we say it's more interesting because you want the excitement to build, but isn't the first thing you do when you look at those lists skip forward and look and see what number one is?
So put it up, that was my whole point.
Right.
People are going to skip to the end anyway. They're not going to read the boring stuff. What I wanted to do is make the boring stuff just headlines. Just do a bunch of headlines, maybe pick out every 5th or 6th one.
Right.
Toward the end of the list. And then, boom, just start with the big one. And have for people who care, there's the big list at the end. Or they could go to the website and read the full write-ups on everything.
But with a website, though, which you can make more linear by saying you have to click through.
Well, we don't do that either.
I know, but if you were to construct an article like that online,
wouldn't you
want number one to be last? Because you'd click all the way through.
But in a magazine, the benefit you're going to get is already gotten. People have already bought the magazine.
Yeah, but you're talking about a moribund medium anyway. I disagree with that. I think magazine craft
is in a really lovely place right now, getting better.
Well, I think the craft is good. I just think that the paper is becoming less and less relevant.
I think that is a very popular thing to say that is wrong on a lot of different levels.
Okay.
I work on a website every day.
The right way to do it, it depends on what kind of list you're making.
I'm not asking this in an argumentative way. I'm just curious. How many print publications do you take regularly?
In the household or myself personally?
How many do you either subscribe to or pay for on a regular basis, whether it be
5.
Okay. And what are they?
I need 5 as well.
Entertainment Weekly, Wired. My wife gets People. She's going to be pissed off at me for admitting
that. What's wrong with that? I enjoy People.
I don't like People.
I don't like People. I like the magazine.
Well, okay. Fair enough. And then I get Cooks Illustrated and Food & Wine.
Okay.
But I only get food and wine because my gourmet subscription was like 4 years and it expired when they shut that magazine.
And what are your five?
Not food and wine, but Bon Appetit, sorry.
Wired, Entertainment Weekly, GQ, Esquire, and Maximum PC.
Oh, and I get Maximum PC too.
Okay. Do you pay for that?
Do you not get PC Gamer anymore?
No, I live with
people. Oh, yeah, you live with those guys. Yeah, I pay for I was kind of bummed. I expected after 10 years of service I would get like a lifetime sub, but
so you have
I pay my $12 a year like everybody else.
I think that five publication thing is an interesting snapshot. Like, I can tell that you're interested in technology
and food
and popular entertainment and food and wine.
Yeah.
I can tell that I'm surprised that you're interested in high-end men's
look at
fashion
a tie.
And so forth.
Norm is a very well-kempt dude.
But I also like technology and entertainment and popular culture.
Well, no, but that's not the surprising part. The GQ and the Esquire, I'm like, why do you need both GQ and Esquire? Isn't there a lot of overlap?
The feature stories are pretty good.
Yeah, the features in Esquire are really good.
Feature stories.
I'm thinking about changing...
I read it for the articles.
I'm thinking,
of course you do. Not the pictures of men.
I'm thinking about changing... That was uncomfortable. I'm thinking about changing the EW subscription to the Atlantic.
EW is so cheap.
The thing is,
they actually get exclusives.
For a long time, the only thing I read in EW was the Stephen King column. And now he's gone, so I don't know that there's any reason to have EW
anymore.
These
days, if you get a yearly you can pick up a yearly subscription magazine to a lot of these magazines for, I mean, pennies,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Well, weekly magazines are expensive.
Entertainment Weekly is like $20 a year for 52 issues.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I was only reading the columns. Like, I don't read the movie reviews anymore.
It's a perfect way to flip through it. I like getting angry at things.
When do you, I mean, do you, will you sit at home and just read, or is, cause I...
Yeah, it's like a Sunday morning activity. Sometimes I bust open Flipbook and read stuff from the internet. If there's nothing interesting on the internet, then I'll grab a magazine.
I like physical magazine over digital magazine.
A friend of mine subscribed me to Reason, gave me a gift subscription to Reason, which is the libertarian magazine, because he's an asshole. So I've had that around my house. It's always one of those things I'm always embarrassed when people come by. Make sure I, like, hide those away because they're crazy libertarians, not like your normal run-of-the-mill libertarian. They're like people with Anne Rind for life tattoos and stuff like that. I'm not into that. I mean, I believe in free market and all that stuff. I don't read Reason. It's too scary for me. So I guess I get seven magazines if you want to be completely honest.
You get it whether you like it or not.
Well, I didn't want to cancel it because, you know, it's more effort than it's worth. I'll just let it run out. It'll run its course.
What about science? What's happening this week?
Oh, so hold on.
Science.
You need help now that your free speech zone is empty.
I'm thinking. Uh-huh. I'm talking to myself.
Yeah,
I think we.
I have two interesting stories.
We blew the cereal discussion too early.
That was gold.
That was good stuff.
Last week when the tangents were weaved into the crust.
See, this is the problem when they. I always said that the outtakes need to be organic.
I think we've got about 5 minutes left.
When they are syrup injected into the pancake as they were last week.
Yes.
It comes great, and everyone on the forums loves them.
Okay. Yeah.
When at the end it's like, okay, now let's talk about something fun and interesting. You have people sitting around going,
Did you see the thing about quantum teleportation of light?
This is old news.
No.
I didn't click on the link because every 6 months...
You just read the headline.
Every 6 months ago, there's a one step closer to Star Trek story. It's like, whatever. Tell me, when they actually really transport matter in any significant way, then I'm all over it.
What about the story about photosynthesis on other worlds might result in a completely different color palette so that flora isn't green?
Oh, God. Is this the stupid cognitive thing where, like, what if your green is my red?
No, this is not that. This is if you're on a red sun, then chlorophyll won't be chlorophyll. It'll be something else. It'll be carotene. Mm. Something that...
So plants will be a different color?
Plants will be a different color.
So like Pandora, basically.
Yeah, okay. That works. Not
all
doing
right.
Anything for you?
So what?
No.
Mm. You want to go get lunch?
Our marathon. We have to plan our marathon.
Oh, yeah. So we're going to do the Voyage, Star Trek Voyager marathon.
Star Trek. Oh, God.
It's going to be on Netflix. Now, you had texted me or Twittered me and said 6 episodes only.
I like that.
I felt like that was just a suggestion.
I think 6 episodes
last year
was not enough.
Start with 6, expand to 8, and cut it off there.
No.
This is not going to be like Next Generation where we're
picking our favorites.
Where it's so hard just to find even 12 because there's so many.
That was
good
a
ones.
Death march of fun.
We're not going to be sitting around going, oh, but look,
only
all
two people
Voyager
made it to the end
that didn't make the cut.
Yeah, for Voyager, you want to introduce the entire spectrum.
Okay. Guys, we have run out of studio time. Man. We'll talk about
Thank
it next
God.
Week. This has been This Is Only a Test. Thank you for listening live. Bye, guys. We'll see you all next week.
Hopefully our
site's
back up by the time you listen to this.
Yeah, man, that would be really awesome. I have someplace to post this when I'm done.
And you know, all three candles still lit.
Still going.
See you all later. Bye.